Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 21st, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email us a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We were looking at the Gospel of John. Chapter 12 was, I believe, this one we read. So we're going to be reading on chapter 13 tonight. So the Gospel of John, chapter 13.
Chapter 13. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God and went to God, he riseth from supper, and laid aside his garments, and took a towel, and girded himself. After that he poureth water into a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter saith unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? Jesus answered and said unto him, What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter saith unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Simon Peter saith unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus saith to him, He that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit. And ye are clean, but not all. For he knew who should betray him, therefore said he, Ye are not all clean. So after he had washed their feet, and had taken his garments, and was set down again, he said unto them, Know ye what I have done to you? Ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example, that ye should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If ye know these things, happy are ye if ye do them. I speak not of you all. I know whom I have chosen. But that the scripture may be fulfilled, He that eateth bread with me hath lifted up his heel against me. Now I tell you before it come, that when it is come to pass, ye may believe that I am he. Verily, verily, I say unto you, He that receiveth whomsoever I send receiveth me, and he that receiveth me receiveth him that sent me. When Jesus had thus said, he was troubled in spirit, and testified, and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you, that one of you shall betray me. Then the disciples looked one on another, doubting of whom he spake. Now there was leaning on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples, whom Jesus loved. Simon Peter therefore beckoned to him, that he should ask who it should be of whom he spake. He then, lying on Jesus' breast, saith unto him, Lord, who is it? Jesus answered, He it is to whom I shall give a sop when I have dipped it. And when he had dipped the sop, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon. And after the sop, Satan entered into him. Then said Jesus unto him, That thou doest, do quickly. Now no man at the table knew for what intent he spake this unto him. For some of them thought, because Judas had the bag, that Jesus had said unto him, Buy those things that we have need of against the feast, or that he should give something to the poor. He then, having received the sop, went immediately out, and it was night. Therefore, when he was gone out, Jesus said, Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God be glorified in him, God shall also glorify him in himself, and shall straightway glorify him. Little children, yet a little while I am with you. Ye shall seek me, and as I said unto the Jews, Whither I go, ye cannot come. So now I say to you, A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another. As I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another. Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, whither goest thou? Jesus answered him, Whither I go thou canst not follow me now, but thou shalt follow me afterwards. Peter said unto him, Lord, why cannot I follow thee now? I will lay down my life for thy sake. Jesus answered him, Wilt thou lay down thy life for my sake? Verily, verily, I say unto thee, the cock shall not crow till thou hast denied me thrice.
Okay, that was read by Alexander Scorby. I forget to mention that. Jan, do we have any questions or any announcements tonight?
We have some questions. I don't have any announcements tonight. So hold on a sec. I'll pull the questions up. We only have three tonight, and they should be short and easy. The first
All right.
one.
And if anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 and a 1, *6 and a 1. Questions or comments? All right, go ahead, Jan.
The first one is from someone who went to Walmart and they refused to allow him to shop there without a mask on his face by telling me to leave. I left and want to file a lawsuit. Do you see grounds in my suit? What can I do? I also was physically removed by police at ShopRite for the same reason.
Well, you know, we've been through this kind of a question quite a bit, and you can sue them, but I would do affidavits and prepare a case, but I wouldn't file until we get to the other side. The other side meaning that we have courts of record opened up again, common law courts. And again, that's not going to happen until there's some kind of an action to take this nation back. And, of course, we are waiting for the military to do that. We do perceive and believe that they're going to do that. So it would be a waste of time, though, to try to do anything at this point in time. But again, while things are fresh, you should get names, addresses, and do your affidavits and prepare for that kind of an argument, you know, because you were refused services. There is a particular code that seems to be pretty much in most states anyway, and I believe there's a federal code also, that you can sue for denial of service because of a prejudice situation, for instance, your health, if you had a health reason why you couldn't wear it. But on the other side of that coin, it is causing health problems, wearing those masks. I know there was a study that was just recently released. Trying to think where I heard this. You might want to go listen up and get some information on this, and you should do it now while it's fresh in your mind. And it would either be on the X22 report, which is X22 report.com. And it's in the past 3 or 4 days that he had given it. Or it is on the Christian Patriot page. That website would be bitchute.com/channel/8X, J as in Jack, C as in Charlie, P as in Peter, 1-1, E as in Edward, I believe that's an L, 6, Z as in Zoo, U as in Umbrella, /. And anyway, if you missed that, you can listen to the recording, rewind, and get that information. But again, you know, there was a study recently reporting, and I didn't take notes on it, of all the different things that are being found on people's masks. Also, you're breathing in carbon monoxide because you're breathing back in, you know, air that you're exhaling, and you're breathing back in the carbon monoxide and the various different bacteria. So, anyway, that's all I can suggest for right now. Okay, next question.
Okay. An entire group of free Americans are currently held in solitary confinement in Washington, D.C. since January 6, 2021. Can we file a habeas corpus to have them released?
What group is it, do they say? Anybody aware of this group?
Say again, John, I didn't catch that.
Are you or anybody did they mention, or are you aware of what group of people that have been arrested since the 6th, which,
well,
of course...
Well, that was the group that supposedly stormed the Capitol.
Well, I didn't think that they were held that long, did you?
Well, now, one that this person mentioned was Thomas Caldwell, who was 63, but he, I checked, and he was released in March of this year. So he's not being held, but this person thought there was a large bunch that was...
Well, if there are people that are being held, we would need someone to act as a next friend. A next friend is an individual who has first-hand information from the person with first-hand information, because affidavits are only good with people with first-hand information. But even though you'd be second-hand information, because the individual is incarcerated, if they're incarcerated, then you can get the story from them and then respond with an affidavit as what's called a next friend. And that's a federal code that they permit next friends. I mean, we'll use their codes for that, of course. And then with those affidavits, we can then do a habeas corpus. But without a next friend to dig up all the information, get all the details, write the affidavit on behalf of the one or more individuals. And if there's many individuals, you would have to have conversation or get someone for a conversation for each and every one of them in order to do the habeas corpuses on all of them. So if someone can do that, if someone still is in jail, or even if they're being held... Okay, if they're being held and you make contact, in other words, held for court, they've been released maybe, and they got to go to court for this or whatever the case may be, and we can do something potentially in the future after this for false arrest, because there's a lot to be learned about what's going on, what actually happened on January 6th and all the details and so on. Again, we need, and those people who are maybe released but have to go to court on this, they would need to do their own affidavits then. So again, someone would have to do that work to accumulate all that information and get those affidavits, if not by the individuals, by themselves, on behalf of those individuals. Okay, what else?
That led right into the next question, John. This person needs all the information on the next friend she can get, and also anything on paralegal services help nationwide.
Well, a next friend is a federal code that permits for people. I don't have the specific code right now. Maybe I can look it up if I get a break away and put it up on the board and announce it. But you can find it. You should be able to find it on our website. If you go look at some of the affidavits, for instance, on our website, if you go to grand jury, let me see, action against the judiciary, it should be probably underneath that tab there. There should be habeas corpuses down here that we've done. Yes, here's habeas corpuses, and let me just open one up, and... there should be something in here on next friend. Okay, if you go through this paperwork, you'll find it. Let me just take a quick look a little more. Hmm. Let me just do a word search. Maybe I can find it quickly. All right, I'm not finding it on that. Anyway, in that paperwork, you should find it. If I get a chance later, I'll throw it up there. Okay, was there a second part to that question, or was it?
No, that was it, John. We're letting you off easy tonight.
Okay, no more questions?
No more questions.
No more announcements, or no announcements, shall I say?
Nope.
Okay. All right, I'm going to get ready. I'm trying now to find a place down here in generally in the Dutchess County area to get committees of safety going, do an introduction on the committee of safety, and just to alert people that are not necessarily in Dutchess County but other counties, I mean, even other states if you wanted to come. I mean, Connecticut's pretty close and Jersey's close. Pennsylvania's a little trip, but, you know, it's not that far. But we're going to do something in Dutchess County, which, again, we're going to hopefully get people from other counties to hear the information we have and on how to get a committee of safety going and the importance of the committee of safety and the power and the authority of the committee of safety and how this indeed is government by consent. I also will be looking, after we do Dutchess County, I'm going to be looking down in New York City, probably Manhattan, so I can hit the five boroughs down there. And if anybody's down in New York City and wants to help us to find a place, where a venue where we can have a meeting, and again, we're inviting people from all five counties down that way and others from other places who want to join us, again, to initiate the beginning of these committees of safety and to teach and train people on that. I'll then be traveling north in New York and looking for various places. I'm not sure specifically. People might want to give me a call and maybe if they can set things up. I'm thinking maybe up in, Albany. Albany might be a good place where we can hit quite a few counties at the same time and, again, do the same thing. Then work our way up a little further north, maybe into Hamilton or something. And then later on, heading out to the western part of New York, maybe in Madison or one of those counties around that, and Ontario, and then Erie. But it doesn't have to be those counties. I'm just pulling counties basically off of the map right now just to get an idea of different places. But again, I'd probably like to hit about seven or eight different locations in New York State where I can try to gather people in many different counties to get them to initiate committees of safeties within their own counties and teach them the urgency of it. And this is extremely urgent. If people want liberty, they need to take control of the nation. And there's only one way to do that, and that's to have government by consent. And there's only one way to have government by consent, and that is to take back control of our courts and our judicial process, and our political process. And if we failed, and the only way we could do that is through working together within our counties through committees of safety. This is what our founding fathers did in order to create this great nation. We can do the same thing in order to save this nation. And it doesn't matter that Trump is still working on things and that the best is yet to come. And it doesn't matter that the military is going to eventually. There is no other way to save this nation, by the way. When you work through all the scenarios, they got all the guns, they got all the power, the authority, they got everything. I mean, it is lock and load, and millions of people would die trying to take back this nation. And we probably still wouldn't succeed because they have everything. Only the military can take this nation back and give it back to the people. There is no other way. Absolutely zero ways to do that. So that, of course, is what we're waiting upon. I do trust in what Trump had said, that the best is yet to come. And he said not long ago, we can't. This nation cannot last to 2022. Forget 2024. We can't make it to 2022. Something needs to be done now. It's not my words. That's Trump's words. And anyway, once that action takes place, the people don't deserve liberty if they don't take control of the things necessary to have liberty. But we have to have government by consent. You have to be the consentors. Refusing to become the consentors and to do the work of the consentors makes you not available or deserving of liberty. And besides that, without doing that, you can't have liberty anyway. Liberty requires action. So hopefully other people in other states are going to follow my example and do what I'm doing here in New York and take the bull by the horn, so to speak, in your state, and you may get a partner or two or three and start traveling. Maybe on some of our meetings here, maybe we can set up a connection if we have someone that is savvy to be able to do that, and we can maybe do this our meetings live over through the internet and out into other places where people can gather together and have a meeting, and you know, I can help to introduce this. But people could do this on their own. You know, we have all of the necessary tools. We have the PowerPoints up on our website under People's Duty in order to do this. You can come down under People's Duty and come under Committees of Safety. And in that area, you should be able to find different videos, PowerPoint videos. And I believe we set up the PowerPoints also. If you wanted to do the PowerPoint live and read it yourself and expound on it as you go through, or play the PowerPoint video and then answer questions and comments and organize after the meeting, after you go through all that. I'm going to be playing the video, PowerPoint video, and then take questions afterwards. Main reason to do that is I kind of get long-winded and get lost in these things, and before you know it, I spend 2 hours on it, and then there's no time for questions. So it prevents me from absorbing too much time and not having time to, give questions. I know if you click on handbooks, there may be some of the tools there, but I'm going to try to find these tools if I before the night is over and tell you where exactly it is. Maybe if Gerard takes over the mic a little later, and I'll try to do that and find out exactly where it is. Let me just take a quick look to see what I do have here. Organizing, it should be right here, Organizing Your Committees of Safety. That's probably where it's at. Let's take a look at that. Oh, no, Instructional Video Conferences. Maybe that's it. Organizing Your County Committee of Safety. Okay. All right, this is, I'll have to take a look at this, but I think this might be the PowerPoint I've been thinking of that is a PowerPoint video. I'm not too sure. Nope, this is actually a full video, so this is one of our meetings, so that's not it. I'll look for it when I get a break, and then I'll make note of it. But again, we need to organize the committees of safety, and we need to do it quickly. And we can take on the job, by the way, of committee man immediately. We don't have to wait to be voted in. After all, those people who are acting as committee men as we speak have not been voted in themselves. They're all appointed. None of them are lawfully representative of anything. But we can act as the committee men until we can become elected, and we will become elected as committee men, which is a two-year term to the job, to the position. But look at what is it that committee men do? Committee men walk papers to get people onto the ballot. They interview people. They discover what their positions are. They make sure that they know what the Constitution, at least they should be, this is what we would do, make sure that they know what the Constitution is, what it says, and how they have to be obedient to it. And if you don't know the Constitution, then you can't ask the right questions because you want to know the right answers. So people should be taking our courses in order to educate themselves on, the Constitution. I strongly suggest everyone take in the Government by Consent course. And that's, of course, the only course we require that you be a premium member for. Everything else on our website is pretty much free. But that's only $5 a month or more, you know. That's giving up a cup of coffee and a bagel or something once a month. I think anybody, pretty much anybody could do that. But you need to become educated, and you need to be able to know the Constitution. So as committeemen, or as acting committeemen, okay, until we become elected committeemen, but as acting committeemen, we can walk papers, and we can recall, too. You see, if we have enough people organized within our counties and the counties around our state, we can recall anyone, because we'll have enough people to go out and get, you know, 15, 20, 25 signatures, and you get all these people that are working together and pull those numbers of signatures together for a recall, and we'll have enough to be able to recall anyone who is not obedient to the Constitution. So we can interview them, and we can, if we decide to support them, we can let them know, by the way, if you break your word and you don't obey the Constitution and acknowledge it, we're going to recall you. So that's one way we can do it. The other thing is the courts. We have to establish 5 people in every county, 4 people particularly, those people who will orientate the grand jury. So we need 4 administrators. And we need 1 paralegal who will also act as an administrator. So it'd be 5 administrators. That extra wheel, so to speak, would be good for when someone's sick or someone goes on vacation or whatever, you know, that there's always enough people to be able to keep things moving. But there's a lot to learn on that. We are writing a handbook on that. We've got a lot of handbooks that we've written for all of these things we're doing. I don't believe we've finished and published the one for, as a matter of fact, I know we haven't. We haven't done one for the administrators of the juries. Let's see. We have a Charter Committee of Safety Handbook, and that's a step-by-step detail on how to organize your county right there. It refers to a lot of information on our website, different videos and PowerPoints that you would want to show once a month. And in the beginning, once you organize your committees of safety, I strongly suggest for the first couple of months you meet every week. Once a week, every week for 4 or 5 weeks, whatever, or up to 8 weeks. Just so you can get really organized, get all of your paperwork done, approach your sheriff. We have a plan for all of that. Write your resolution, and everyone should take their vow. Then there's the committeeman handbook, detailed information on how the committeeman process works, powers and authorities, again. Jurist handbook, jurist questionnaire, militia codes, rules, and resolutions that we put together, recalling a petition. So once you become a committeeman, you get information on recalling there. We have the sheriff's handbook. Now, we haven't put up yet the handbook on the administrators for the juries. I'm still kind of working on that anyway. But that will be available soon. I mean, by the time we get people organized in a county and starting to take those positions, we'll have that book done. And again, we're not going to be able to take the courts back until we get to the other side. Then we're going to go hardcore. We're going to go after the United States Supreme Court. Let's see what they're going to do over the course of the next few months and where they're going to sit, where their positions are going to be, and what they're going to do to bring us back under common law, because they've stolen our heritage. The United States Supreme Court is the court that has stolen our heritage. The United States Supreme Court is the court that maintains the loss of our heritage. By the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, and then in 1938, the United States Supreme Court, bar-controlled, bar-steered, wrote the rules which destroyed our republic completely. Our courts are destroyed. There is no court of law. There is no common law. There is no court of justice in any federal court, state court, or county court throughout America. They just don't exist. But only the people can reverse this and take it back. And we will take it back, providing the people want to take it back. It's time to step up and get active and let's do things. So anyway, anybody that wants to do what I'm doing, let's start off with this. Anybody in New York State in one of those counties or around one of those counties I mentioned, would like to try to find a venue for us, and we'll set up a date, and I'll come up that way, and we'll advertise to everyone within NLA that's in New York to visit us for that. And, of course, the people within that county would also try to work to get people not only within their counties but the surrounding counties. There's all kinds of liberty groups throughout New York and throughout every state, really. And that's how we can bring our message out. Let's build committees of safety. Let's save America. And that's the way we're going to do it. Okay. Let's go on, I guess. Again, anybody wants to get into the queue, a star 6 and a 1. Jan, is Gerard here, or is Brent here tonight? I don't see them.
I haven't seen them, John.
Okay. Well, someone to keep an eye out for them. Okay, we'll take our first question. Kevin from New York, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi there, John. How do you hear me?
Hearing you fine. I already know your question, but go ahead.
You got it. Still waiting for that book, pal, and you're supposed to have a date for us.
I got good news. Everything is done and been set forth. They've acknowledged that. They said I would receive one book in 2 weeks, and that was just this last week that I spoke with them. So 2 or 3 weeks I should receive that book and physically feel it and look at it, see it in person, so to speak, and then give them my okay on that, and then we go directly to print. So we could be, a week or two from that, let's say, and then a couple of weeks probably to go to print. So we're getting very close. But,
that's quite a distance from now. I thought it was going to be a lot sooner than that.
Well, I was hoping it would be too. But look, they don't give me all the information. They just don't give me the information. I don't want to talk bad about them, but I'm not the happiest camper here.
Sure, there's over 50 of us waiting. I see the list that you have on the website there of all the purchasers.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And if anybody wants to get a pre-order on the website, right-hand side, pretty much on every page, you'll see the book, Government by Consent, by John Duresh. And, click on that, and you can get all the information and details about the book, and you can order it there. So, okay, anything else, Kevin? Any questions?
No,
or
that's
comments?
It for me. All right, thank you. Okay.
All righty. Thank you. Again, star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue. Dan from North Carolina, how you doing, Dan? Dan? Dan from North Carolina.
Something tells me that he didn't expect to get on this early.
All right, well, let me try to mute him and go to the next one, see what happens, if I can keep him in there. Let's go to Sanjay, Phoenix, ooh, Arizona. And by the way, the queue is empty for anyone who wants to get in, star 6 and 1 to get into the queue. Sanjay, go right ahead. Go ahead, Sam. What's your first name? Is that your name, Sanjay?
No, my first name is Cynthia.
Cynthia. I can hear you, Cynthia.
Okay, so my question is this. I have a couple questions. I have a couple questions and probably some statements. But I'm curious as to, in the first revolution, well, there's two things going on. Like, I was getting this habeas corpus done, and I don't know if you've ever heard about Stephen Windmiller, and he talks about your signature. So what I've stopped doing my signature, I print it out, but I can't use that when I do this habeas corpus. So I'm kind of caught between a rock and a hard place because I recognize there's certain things that as in common law that we do that we didn't do now, but yet we do today. And I just kind of feel like a lot of times we have been so indoctrinated, even when we come out of it, when we think we're out of it, we're still indoctrinated, because I personally think that we should, I mean, even though you're going to be doing all that, you said you're going to be, we have to wait to hold these people accountable. I disagree, because I think that is what the biggest problem is that there's no accountability. Like with this habeas corpus, I did a jurisdictional challenge. I still have this ankle monitor on my leg. There's no accountability. They do what the hell they want to do. And you know why? Because I'm a social worker, and I know that if behavior is never challenged, it doesn't change. And you know, I may be dead by the time, you know, I could be dead and gone by the time, you know, they get this country back, if we do. But this is how I see it. We're all responsible for us individually. Individually, we are responsible to if we see things going wrong, we're supposed to hold them accountable right then and there, not wait for a whole group, because that's what's wrong with American people. They're always waiting for someone to guide them. And this is why we basically have lost things. That's number one. Number two, I mean, like, I just don't understand. I just don't understand. Okay, so I do this habeas corpus. Is there any – I mean, if they can get in – you know what? I heard you say they have all the guns. No, they got all the guns. But if they were going to take over, they would have taken over already. Because at the end of the day, they know that there is more of us than there are of them. And I think that if we do, for me, I'm just not going to just ignore it, because like what they're doing now, I'm not going to just let it go, because they've taken all my stuff, and it's not right. And I'm not going to wait until whenever to you guys. I mean, I appreciate what you guys are doing, but on the real side, I don't know. I just feel
Let me try to respond to some of that, then you can continue on with more if you want.
All right.
But generally speaking, look, you're right to a degree. Number one, you can't win in these courts. It's very difficult. Once in a while you can get a win. It depends on the judge. It depends on, you know, how you kind of position your case in such a way that the judge gets nervous and maybe will see your way. But there's certain things in certain cases judges just will not make a decision on. I had an IRS case, let me just make my points kind of respond to what you were saying, and you can talk some more after that. I had an IRS case, and I put the judge in a precarious position, and of course I'm not going to win in a court against the IRS, at least not in this environment. But I think I put the case powerful enough and put the judge into really arm's way, so to speak. Then the IRS, you know, folded and gave me an apology letter and a release of lien. That's a very rare thing. I backed off of the case because of that at that point, because I was happy with that. I didn't want to poke the hornet's nest anymore. I just wanted him to leave me alone. So, I mean, that's a case that I had won there. But generally speaking, I got another judge, okay, because they left $80 on the bill. After about 6 months or a year goes by, all of a sudden they say, hey, by the way, you still owe us $80, and they can't even account for that $80. And that $80 in the course of 3 years or so accumulated to about $80,000. So that's very – I'm curious on how they did that. But in any event, I'm in court now again, and I've sued them. And I got a judge that is just breaking – they all defaulted. The U.S. attorney defaulted. And the judge is forgiving everybody, bringing them back into the court. They're just doing whatever they want. We got a judge.
That's right.
Where we really got to get to and how we may get there, or I believe how we will get there. We will get there. The point is what are the people going to do to keep us there once we do get there? So anyway, I'm still in battle with this court. Right now, they're guilty of fraud in the court, which is the use of the judicial machinery in order to destroy an individual. And so I'm going after them for that. The judge colluded with the U.S. attorney, and I can prove that. The judge colluded with another attorney, which another group of people, because the IRS hired another group of people to come, you know, get their money from me. And you know, what do they call a collection agency.
Right.
So I went after all of them. They all defaulted. And the judges, the judge had removed me from my court of record. I don't belong in their court. I don't belong in an equity court. I don't even belong in a federal court, as a matter of fact. I belong in the state court. But in any event, I went after all these people individually. I didn't go after the IRS as an IRS agency or entity, but I went after the individuals. But in any event, I'm in court, and in two occasions, I told the judge that I've been taken to jurisdictions unknown. I don't know where I'm at. What jurisdiction am I in? I demand to know the jurisdiction. And the judge flat out said no. She's not going to tell me the jurisdiction. And the last time I had a hearing, I said, are you going to tell me what jurisdiction I'm in so I can defend myself? Because how can I defend myself if I don't understand the jurisdiction? And again, she said, no, I'm not going to tell you. So, you know, right there, I got such a case, and I'm going to go after all of them criminally, because now it's conspiracy. It's a criminal act, and they're working together. And the U.S. attorney, and I brought it to his attention, you know what took place. You know what happened. You know what she's doing illegal, and now you're enjoining her. Okay, so I'm going after all of them for collusion. It's a conspiracy at this point. Yes. And now another lawyer is now involved. And again, so we have a conspiracy between two lawyers. One of them is a U.S. attorney and a judge. Okay, but I'm not going to get justice anywhere now. I'm going to be filing my papers shortly. I'm waiting to hear her answer to the last hearing that we had. And then I'm going to sue them directly. I'm going to sue the judge directly. I've told this judge to recuse herself numerous times. I said, you need to recuse yourself. First of all, I challenge jurisdiction. You don't have a jurisdiction, and you have not had a hearing on jurisdiction, and you're already biased. You believe you have jurisdiction, so you can't hear the case on jurisdiction.
Right.
Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided, and you can't decide it. And she decided it anyway without even papers from the other side. And I said, well, how can you do that? How can you decide that? My papers are in the court. My position is clear. There is no opposition, and you as a judge can only rule on what's before the court. How can you put things into the court and make assumptions where there is no case laid out?
You're right. You're right. But there's no accountability.
Hold on. I'm almost done. This is what we're up against, which is pretty much in alignment with your thinking and what you're going through and the problems you're having. Now, with that in mind, what do you think, if we can get courts that become courts of justice, don't you think we can get justice then?
Well, so let me tell you, can I share something?
I'm going to finish and I'm going to let you talk, but I want to finish this conversation on this part. Do you think that if we can get courts of justice, that then justice will be applied in the courts? It's obvious, right, that it will be applied in the courts. We will get justice. But the only way we can get justice, and then I'm going to get you back to Mike. Hold on. The only way we can, because I got to finish the point. The only way we're going to get justice and get back courts of justice is for the military to do what they have to do, arrest these people, because this is a huge conspiracy that's been going on for 200 years. This has been going on all the way back to 1776. You know, the Revolutionary War has never ended.
Who started the first Revolutionary War. It was a few people at a coffee shop when the first revolution started.
I missed that because you broke away. Say that again.
Something about a coffee shop? The first revolution was not the military. It was a few people that had gotten together at a coffee shop and they got sick and tired of it. And that was right after the Stamp Act. And they got sick and tired, and they went and started removing those people off the king, off the bridges. The other thing is when behavior is never penalized,
I'm not familiar with the details that you're bringing up.
It wasn't a lot of people that started the initial revolution. It was a few people.
Look, at Benjamin Franklin seems to have been the big one that started this, and it goes back to maybe 15, 20 years before the revolution took place, actually, because he was fighting with the king, going into England, trying to deal with the problems because the king just wasn't listening to the needs of the people within the colonies.
So let me ask you this.
But let me just finish my point here, though, because You know, once we get to the other side, then we'll get courts of justice.
I won't be here.
And we will go after the judges or that they missed,
here.
That they're not in jail, okay? Well, you don't. Why wouldn't you be here? It's going to happen
who
soon.
Knows, who knows when that'll be? Because as long as it's long
got
as
to happen soon.
Here, it'll what, never happen.
Okay, look at what's going on. Look what Biden is doing right now. He is overturning everything that Trump.
Yeah, that's right. I saw that.
But listen. Why is he moving so quickly? Trump has neutralized everything that they've used against him. They had the Russian thing; he neutralized that. They had this this thing with the virus; he neutralized that. They're out in the open, and everyone is starting to see.
The Constitution doesn't say Trump ordains the law; it says the people ordain the law, and we have to get up. We have to start somewhere. I can't wait on someone else to do it for me.
Well, the problem is the people aren't ready for that, number one, okay? They're not organized for something like that, you know, particularly, okay? We do need something to happen. At some point, if nothing is done, at some point the people will have to step up and do something. But until that happens and they really start coming out after the people really hard, and they're moving towards that, all
now
right?
You know, they're, yeah, huh? You're right. I just think that I'm gonna start going to the board of supervisors. I've been going to their meetings, listen to what's going on, so that I can do things from the outside. It's not just. And then the other thing is they basically there's no penalty. I know for a fact they have a public hazard bond, because I checked into risk management all the way to the state level. I promise you, if you get a couple of them and you nail them. I promise you, you want to do a lot of them. But right now, they're just getting away with whatever they want. They're doing whatever they want to do.
Yeah, because because they own everything. They got the guns. They got everything. And a lot of them are just useful idiots. There's a money game going on here. They don't have that, no. But they're useful idiots, okay? They're playing along with the game. They got controls, okay, and there's not much the people can do until it really gets really, really hardcore.
Okay, so say if it wasn't bad like this, what would protect us from not just tyrannical government, but just let's say a police officer does something wrong to you. You can't sue a police officer in those courts because the courts are no longer for the people. So what would be the second best? Because every behavior has to be held accountable. Otherwise, it doesn't change. It just simply gets worse. So just say we weren't doing all this. Where would you don't think that they have some kind of insurance, something that protects us? I think it's an indemnity bond. I think they have one. They all have one.
I'm as frustrated and as angry as you are, but I try to maintain myself, and you should do the same thing. I know. I'm just saying. But listen. When you talk to these people, okay, and you get excited and angry, and you go, they think that you is a nut to begin with because they don't see what you see, okay? Those people in control, they're so lost in their own little world and their own little income that they're getting and all the money under the table and all the perks that they're getting. They're so lost in that world and enjoying their weekends and their holidays and their vacations. They're so lost in that world that they do not see how serious it is, okay? And so when we do approach them, we have to find a way to bring them to see that. Now, that's difficult to do. Number one, they don't even want to listen to you anyway. But especially if you get really excited and angry, then definitely they're just shutting you right off altogether.
I'm not getting excited.
But again, this is a time for education. This is a time for preparing. This is a time for organizing. Because unless you've organized and educated yourself and the people all around you are educated, you can't accomplish anything. So right now we can do nothing because the people are ignorant to how to government by consent. The people are ignorant to what the law is. They don't know what the law is. They don't understand the law. And they don't understand the political process. They don't understand the judicial process. They don't understand what statutes and codes are. They don't know any of these things. They don't know how to have government by consent. So until they learn that, we don't have a chance. And that's why we keep pushing for education and organization right now and get ready, because the time is coming and it's very close. But we need to get ready to receive the power. What do they call it? The power vacuum that's going to take place. When these people are arrested, there's going to be a power vacuum. And if we the people don't fill that power vacuum and take control, someone will. And you know it'll be a political animal.
I know what you're saying, but what I'm saying is, like, I don't get excited, but it's not just in the court system. I recently bought a hotspot, and I read the terms and conditions, and it's a contract. So it ran out after 22 days. It says in the contract in the contract, under the Truth in Lending Act, all parties have to have a meeting of the mind, and we all have to agree. Well, they didn't go over the terms and conditions with me. They just gave me the hotspot, and they took my money.
What contract are you talking about?
With T-Mobile.
And so, okay.
What I'm trying to tell you is that it's the law. I mean, the brokenness is not just at the court level. It's all through society.
Yeah, we know that.
It's all through society.
Yes.
And some of these people have just fallen by the wayside. That's why one scripture says many will go through the wide gate. That's how I see that, because so many people just believe the lie. I can't explain it. It's hard to understand.
Because they're ignorant. Keep the slaves ignorant. Don't let them read. Don't let them have knowledge, because once you do that, they may try to take control. They've kept us ignorant, and we've been enslaved. We've been enslaved since the early 1900s. 1913, the Federal Reserve came into being. And they enslaved us with a slave tax. They've taken away the authority and the right and the ability to vote of the states. They don't control the Senate no more. The Senate is controlled by people that are voted in, just like Congress.
I think they're controlled by the shadow government.
Of course they are, but they're not controlled by the states.
No, and wait a minute. Now I just did.
So
a,
the states,
I mean, they,
the
I,
states
I
have lost.
I did research on Arizona, and Arizona is still a republic. It never even got its statehood.
The states have lost their ability to have any vote in Congress at all, because they don't control their senators. Each state should have two senators, and they're to control it. So they don't have any more control on that. The people have lost control. Look at. We're in a nation out of control, controlled by Marxists. It's that simple.
So there's really no law then, right?
It's lawless. The courts are lawless. Everything's lawless. Absolutely. But you see, there is still the appearance of lawfulness. Just the appearance. They try to keep the appearance up. Trump never should have won. And by now, we should have been at war with Russia or China. We should have been decimated, and we should be moving right into slavery at this point. Trump prevented. Well, look at Trump. Trump prevented that from happening. He spoiled their plans. This guy in the White House is not the president. He's not going to continue much longer. Now, people may think he is, but he's not going to. He can't, because everybody knows it was a sham. It was a fix. The fix was in. Everybody knows that they stole the election, and not only the president, they stole the election and a lot of other elections.
They did the same thing with Bush.
Bush was the enemy anyway. But the thing is that the point is this last election, and you know, 2020's election, all other people running for all different offices, a lot of those offices were stolen, especially
first and foremost, if the only 3% of the people's vote counts, how are they getting in? That's number one. Only 3% of the of when you go we go. The masses go and vote, 3% of that matters.
There's nothing we could do until it's cleaned up. And if I was wrong, if I'm wrong, which I don't believe in, I don't even believe there's a chance I'm wrong. But let's say I am wrong, okay? And Trump can't get back in, and Trump doesn't come back in, and this guy continues, and the next year comes about, and things get worse, and then we end up in war or something, or whatever the case may be. At that point, the only thing left is for the people to step up and do something. And it has to be really hardcore at this point to make people do this. And people are no longer, you know, they're not rough and tough anymore. People are soft.
Yeah,
okay. If you look around, you know, I was talking to this guy I was talking to this guy from Greece, and he was telling me Americans are fat.
Yeah.
Everybody's fat. What's going on here? You know, we eat processed food. We eat so much all the sugar and stuff that we have. We have the GMOs. Our bread, our flour is destroyed.
It's all messed up. But there's other things going on. Like I know that the fluoride over time. It's like, I can't think of what it is. It's an antidepressant that makes you, it makes people docile. And that's what it is.
Back in the 19th century and the early part of the 20th century, the people were rough. Okay, they were rough. They could deal with that. They didn't have electric. A lot of them didn't, especially in the 1800s. They didn't have electric. You know, they didn't have all the conveniences we have. We've become so soft.
I think we're not rugged anymore. It's all part of the design.
Of course, that's the point.
All part of it, just to keep us. I mean, just to keep us. That's another level of controlling.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, absolutely. That's the problem. There it is. You got it. Now, we have to overcome that, okay? And I do believe, you know...
I have overcome it. This is where
we must stand at this point in my belief, because this is the only thing that's going to save us. But God says, if my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways, I will hear their prayers and heal their land. Okay?
Yeah.
And I do see that happening. It appears as if that's happening. We don't need everyone to do that. We just need the children of God to wake up and do that. That's all we need, and that's a small percentage of people. Okay? So that's all we need, is the people of God to wake up, humble themselves, pray, and turn from their wicked ways. Because we have become too soft, and we have gotten too much into the flesh, and it's time to turn to the Spirit, and it's time to step up and get educated, not only in, of course, God's Word, but we need to get educated in what's going on as far as how the courts work and how the process works, our founding fathers, what is common law. And all that leads us right back to the Word of God anyway, because that's where common law comes from, the Bible. But that's right. What we got to get to, okay? Now, God will do the rest of the work, all right? But we have to step up and do the work, too. We have to step up and get educated and take control.
Right, but he puts in every last one of us a sense of, because I have a sense of, like, I know what I'm supposed to be doing. It's not a fact of me waiting for someone to do it for me. Even if I have to infiltrate
are you familiar with our plan with the committees of safety?
If you want to fix your problems,
you need to get the people in your county together. You need to get meetings going. You need to get educated with them. They need to get educated with you. We need to learn the process. We need to connect with the sheriff. We need to educate the sheriff. We need to take our government back on the local level, take back our town government, our village government, our county government, our state government, take it all back. Because when we all do that in every state, then we take back the federal.
I was doing that last year, and this is how I caught this case. I started doing that. I've been doing that for a long time, and I've been helping.
You have committees of safety started, and
no,
you went through
the process. No, I don't. Because no one listens. I don't know how to go about doing that.
Well, listen. We're teaching people how to do that. It all starts with the first education with you. Look, we have a handbook, step by step, on how to do it, how to connect with people, how things work. I don't know, are you coming in on phone or are you coming in with the internet? Can you see the page I'm sharing?
I'm on my phone right now.
Okay, well, if you highlight on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, you highlight People's Duty, you come down to handbook.
I've been with National Liberty Alliance since before I left Ohio. I've been in Arizona for 3 years, and I have been trying to, but I don't know what it is.
Have you read the Committee of Safety Handbook?
No, I did it earlier, but let me finish. I did do it, but I'm also doing the governed by consent. I'm doing that class.
Okay, but you can organize and take hold of the government by the Committee of Safety Handbook. Let me open it up. Committee of Safety Handbook. Okay, if you open that handbook up, it's 74 pages. As you're educating yourself, start organizing. This book will lead you and teach you how to organize your county, how to organize your committees of safety in your county. Okay, and look, once you connect with one person who sees it the way you see it, okay, you're going to get more help. Many hands make light work. And we can't do this by ourselves as individual. We have to be individuals, plural, together. We have to get 2 people, 5 people, 20 people. When you get 20 people really working to do what's got to be done, before you know, you have hundreds of people in your meetings coming up and taking control of
your
county.
Most people are brain dead. I have not ran into anyone who even thinks like I think.
Because, well, again, you go to the Liberty groups. You go to meetup.org, and you put in your zip code, and you look for Liberty groups, and you go visit those Liberty groups and say, hey, look, why don't we get the solution to this problem? And then you start talking to them about the committees of safety. You share the handbook with them. You get them to come to a meeting for the whole county where other Liberty groups come together and form a committee of safety. Read the handbook. Okay, but educate yourself at the same time, taking the courses.
I'm always educating myself. I don't watch TV, and all I do is read. But no one pays attention. Everyone thinks everyone's still leave it to Beaver.
I understand what you're saying, and you know, it depends.
I hear what you're saying, and I'm willing to do that. But look it.
Everybody has a certain amount of influence, a certain amount of people around them, and you're right. And often, often a lot of people with the interest that we have, a lot of people around us don't have that interest. But
no.
We need to look for those people. And I'm telling you that there, in your county alone, I'll bet you there's a half a dozen Liberty groups in your county alone. I'll bet you that.
I'm gonna look. I haven't found them, but I'm gonna look.
Go to gun clubs. Go to gun clubs.
Okay, so this is I was in jail, and it's called the Bondi Project. They bailed me out. I called them, and it was basically they wrote me an email, asked me would I be willing to petition with them to the governor because they're starting back up with the when they're killing people in prison, and so they were telling me about what happened. And I don't know how to help them because they're still in that world. They're still in that world.
All right, well, look it. Okay, look it. Listen. You should go up and sign up to start a committee of safety in your county. Once you do that, you'll get access to all the people, all National Liberty Alliance's membership within your state.
I can't afford the book right now.
Within your state. Huh?
I can't afford the book right now.
I'm not talking about the book.
No, handbook, where does it say go to do that?
To do what?
To sign up to put together a safety group.
You go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, okay? On our website, you go to People's Duty. You come down to Committee of Safety, okay? And you come, and underneath the Committee of Safety, you'll see a place where find your county Committee of Safety. You click on that page, okay? When you click on that page, you then look for your state, okay? Now, you're in Arizona. Okay,
right.
So let me click on Arizona. Click on Arizona. Now, in Arizona, we have 373 members in your state, okay? So what you want to do, right now there are two people that have already set up, one in PIMA County, I don't know how to pronounce that, and the other one is YAVAPAI. I don't know what that is, but that's seems to be a county. So there's two counties already organizing. So if you don't see anybody organized, if these counties are close to you, go visit them and ask them if they'll help you get a committee of safety going in your county, okay? Work with them. They'll work with you. But you can also put your name down here. You can say, okay, let me join and become a leader for my county. So you click on the button to become a I'm looking for that button right now. Where is that button? Subscribe. Oh, you could either subscribe to the group. You don't want to do that. You want to... I don't know where the button is on this. I'll have to find out. I'll have to find out on this. Jen, do you know where the button is on this to become a committee of safety, open a committee of safety? Didn't Carl fix that yet?
Well,
hold on a minute. Jen, did I guess Carl didn't fix this yet. Hopefully, I'll talk with Carl to get him to put a button up here. If not, you can go to your, up to your account, my account. I don't want to click on my account. My personal information's in there. But if you click on my account, there's a button in there where you can open up and start a committee of safety. But there should be one on this page. I'll talk with Carl about it. But you click the button, you get your name on there, on your county for the committee of safety. Then you should have access to download all the phone numbers, the names and phone numbers of all the people in your state. And it will be broken up by counties. You get the people in your county or the counties next door to you. You get a partnership going with them. Make a plan to come together to get your first meeting going, to, you know, invite as many people as you can and establish yourself. And then follow through, right through the handbook on how to do it, step by step, how to create that committee of safety. All right? That's what you need to be doing if you want to really make a difference. Okay? Because, you know, you're not going to be able to defeat this on your own. You already know that. I know that. You know that. But you have to get together with other people, and
but
we have to do it.
Yeah, I could get together with other people, but sometimes I don't like to be around people because they think like sheep, and they just, well, just get back in the fold.
Well, look, you'll find people that don't think like sheep. I don't think like sheep. All the people come to this meeting aren't thinking like sheep.
But there's a lot of people who
but you got to find.
I'm
giving you the areas where you can find people who are not thinking like sheep.
I'm going to see. Last year I looked for someone, and I think it was in Gilbert. It was a sheriff. I think it was on the web. That website we were looking for, the sheriff, was in Colorado, and he lived in Gilbert, and they didn't answer their phone.
Well, again, you know, we have to keep pursuing. Okay, that's all I can tell you. I'm going to take the next caller because we've been on for a while. If you want to talk some more, you can get back into the queue. There's only one person in the queue right now. Anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6. Yeah, and
okay.
One.
And John, if you go to the People's Duty, click on Committees of Safety, scan down and click on Find Your County COS. It walks you right through. It tells you go to My Account, click Edit, click Contact Information, and then check the box for COS County Leader.
Okay, so it's in the upper part. Okay, here it is. Step 1, My Account Edit. Okay, we couldn't put a button on here for them to just click, I guess.
Probably could have.
Yeah, see, if talk to Carl. I think I wrote this up. I forgot that I even wrote this up. But talk to Carl. See if we could put a button on there, because they're already recognized. If they're a member and they're signed in, they'll be recognized when they click the button. The name should automatically just pop in, and there you go. They now can you know, organize their county. The other thing is talk to Carl to make sure that that anybody who does that can download the first name and phone numbers of everyone within their state. The first name, phone number, and first name and county and phone number of everyone in their state. That's the three pieces of information that they need, okay? And we got to make it easy and accessible to the people, and then they need to organize. It's that simple.
You want all the people in the state or in the county?
Well, they should have all the people in the state, because they can work with the counties next door, and you know, and they should be working with the counties next door also. But yeah, we want them to be able to communicate with everyone within their state. We don't want no emails, because people will go and try to solicit. You know, we'll get those people come in and solicit people by getting masses of emails, you know. So, okay. All right, Cynthia, if you want to get back into the queue, we can talk some more, but I want to take the next person, all right?
All right.
Thank you. And anybody else who wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. And has Gerard come in, or has Brent come in yet?
No, neither one is here.
Gerard is here.
Oh, Gerard is here.
Yeah, you can unmute him if you want.
Gerard, do you want to take control in a short? When did he sneak in? I didn't see him come in.
Yes, he snuck right in on you.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll see if he responds. I'll take the next caller while I'm waiting.
I can't unmute him, so he's muted on his end.
Yeah. All right. Okay, let's take our next caller, Jeannie Price. You got the mic. Go right ahead. And anybody else wants to get in the queue, star 6 and a 1.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you, Jeannie.
All right, thank you. Thanks for taking my question.
What state are you in?
I'm in Wyoming.
Okay, Jeannie from Wyoming. Go ahead.
It has to do with the committee men. It's an elected position. Mm-hmm. You said that some people are filling that role and they aren't elected yet. My question...
Yeah. Go ahead.
My question has to do with prior felonies. Having a prior felony, a 20-year-old felony, has kept me from legally being able to run for office, being able to vote. I feel unconstitutionally my rights are being withheld from me. The right to bear arms, the right to vote, the right to run for any public office. It's made me feel like I don't have a voice for way too long. And with the way things are and the place and time we're at, I finally just had to get over that and start speaking out and speaking up anyway. Mm-hmm. But my question is, under common law, that wouldn't be an issue. Am I correct?
That's correct. It's evil what they're doing. How can they mock a person for life when they've done something wrong, especially if they've gone through paying the price, which the price should have been restitution. It shouldn't have been jail time or anything of that
nature. I agree.
In some cases, maybe it should be jail time, but generally speaking, it shouldn't be. It should be restitution. And once that person has paid their restitution and conformed, you see, the thing about common law, it not only restores the individual that's been, you know, abused or injured, but it also, you know, it restores the individual who offended that person. That's what common law is all about, to bring them back into the fold, so to speak, if that's possible. And look at true justice and a just, you know, a just penalty, which focuses in on restitution, that brings an opportunity for that to happen. But yeah, once people have gone through and passed that process of time, whatever the penalty was, and maybe there's a time of, what do they call that, after you come out of jail, you're on probation. Maybe there's a time of probation. And once whatever it is that's done and over with, yeah, you should get your guns back and your saddle and your horse or whatever, here, so to speak.
I agree.
You
know? I think but, that we ask
because
people
it's evil. It's evil not to be able to allow people to become restored.
Right. We ask people to, you know, come back and be productive members of society,
right.
and then we hold them back with employment and with their rights and make them feel like second-class citizens.
But
I know.
You see, because look at the justice system, if you want to call it that. It's not. They shouldn't use that name. But the criminal system, shall I say, the criminal
monetary.
Court. Yeah,
it's corporate. It's
absolutely, they are doing nothing to really restore the individual. Everything's for them. You see, by putting you in jail, there's money for them. Okay, if they fine you, there's money for them. And
right,
they'll use
right.
the person who has injured, and they'll bring him in as a witness, and they go through all the thing, but at the end of the day, they throw him out in the streets, and they take everything for them. That's
well,
the system
we
have.
A lot of times there isn't even an injured party anymore in our
Well, that's district. True. That's true, yeah.
Yeah, and mine is a federal felony, so it makes it almost impossible to get my rights restored.
Well, you see, unless you were operating in some... unlawful commercial activity interstate, okay, all right, they should never have, they don't have the authority to try you for anything. You know, I know they use USC 18, which is their criminal code. That's all unlawful. It's unconstitutional. Federal courts have no authority over the people themselves to try them for anything. Now, if you were involved in some illegal commercial activity that's interstate, okay, interstate is the key, right? But being with only commercial activity and something illegal, only then do they have the authority to be able to come out after you, you know? But other
well,
than that, they don't.
It stems back to a drug issue, you know.
Again, they have no authority.
I absolutely agree. I took
they
a wrong
don't have the jurisdiction.
Turn. That's right. Mm-hmm. So back to the committee men.
Mm-hmm.
Where does this fall for that now? Where we're
yeah,
at now?
Yeah, you could become a committee man. I don't see why not.
Okay.
And you should be look at when we move over to common law. When we move over to common law, then we have we have to then go to the common law processes, and if you've paid your penalty to society or whatever they want to call it. And in your case, you probably could challenge the whole thing to have it erased because they didn't have the jurisdiction yeah. over to begin it with to prosecute
been,
you.
It wouldn't have been prosecuted under
right.
common law.
So, but in any event, no, you should be able to do pretty much anything you need that's necessary, okay?
Okay.
And becoming a committee man, look, there are no elected committee men that I have found. I'm not saying that there are absolutely no committee men anywhere that's elected, but I haven't found them yet. And I've looked into many states, and
they aren't even ballot yet, are they? It's not
it. I haven't found one, not one that's truly elected. They're all fake and phony.
So we need to start going about getting that.
We teach the process on how to do it, and we can take our time doing it, and we could do it right. But meanwhile, we can act as committeemen just as they do. We can walk papers as committeemen. We can interview people as committeemen. We can do recalls just as committeemen do. And when we have the powers and authorities to walk their papers and power to recall them, then we can call them onto the carpet and let them know that we are the acting committeemen, okay, and that we're going to remove you from office if you don't start obeying the law. And then do recalls. Recalls is only a matter of doing petitions. You can take them right out of office. And if they've committed a bad act, you know, a felony or something, then we can indict them through the courts.
Wyoming has excused themselves somehow by law to where they none of our elected officials can be recalled.
Well, that's nice, isn't it? That doesn't mean we can't do it and we're not going to do it, and we'll do it anyway, and then we'll challenge them in the courts once we get courts of justice. But again, that's why we have to take back the courts.
They can't do that.
We have to take back the judicial system, and we have to take back the political system. We're doing it both at the same time. And we have to get educated now.
Right,
we have to get educated now. We can't wait, because when the time comes and the opportunity is there, we have to seize the moment.
I absolutely appreciate that about your website and your group. Actually, that's how I found you. I was looking for sources on getting educated
mm-hmm.
on the founding documents on government by consent. Also, I was researching content for when I went to interview our sheriff quite a while ago, a few months ago. And your name came up twice, so that's what attracted me to your website to begin with. I really appreciate your courses.
All right, well, appreciate that. All right, any other questions or comments?
No, thank you so much.
All right, thanks for the call. Okay, we have nobody in the queue here, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. We got Michael from, is that Missouri? Michael, you got the mic.
Yeah, I got the mic from Michigan.
Michigan, hey. Okay.
Yeah, we got. There's a lot of tremendous stuff going on in Michigan, but to say that I'm 100% taking full advantage of it is probably not to be the truth. But I do understand. But this talk about the current military tribunal type of court system we have in this country today is in relation to our government as being a corporation. Would you say solely that the reason why they don't have any jurisdictional authority of this because our government is actually a corporation, which is a fiction,
and that's a fraud.
Right.
We have a covenant with God made back in 1776 called the Declaration of Independence. And that was a covenant with God in order to be under his law and receive his blessings of liberty. And even if you go into the Constitution and the preamble, it talks about that very thing. The purpose of government is to protect the blessings of liberty. And that covenant cannot be broken. That's an eternal covenant. There's no breaking that. Only but God, by God's wrath can it be broken. Only God can actually break that covenant because of who we are and the way we've dealt with things. I mean, we've been horrible, really. As a people, we're ignorant and we're not doing the right thing. But in any event, there was a covenant made with God, and these people think that they can just erase it, They had no power, no authority. They were brought into any powers and authority under the Constitution. They took an oath, and they need to be dealt with because they broke that oath. They're terrorists, and they have committed tyranny,
right.
Subversion. They've destroyed our republic. They've destroyed our economic system. You know, this whole thing traces all the way back to the bar, the British bar. It goes way, way back, even way before 1776.
Well, way before that.
Oh, yeah, way, way before. And what people need to understand, you know, when I listen to some of these arguments and complaints, and they'll bring up things like, oh, our founding fathers were slave owners. Well, wait a minute, we were not America then. They were born into the British colonies. And there was the British colonies, the British that brought the slaves in and all this other stuff. And our founding fathers were rejecting that. And the whole process, Jefferson did everything he could to free his slaves. It was illegal, unlawful for him to free his slaves in Virginia. The only way he can get rid of his slaves is sell them. He could not liberate them. And he fought as a governor, and he fought his two terms as a legislator, and he wrote the Declaration of Independence, and he continued that battle all the way through. And if you read the writings of Abraham Lincoln, he speaks about all the work our founding fathers did, particularly Jefferson, to try to free the slaves and to end that whole process. And he believed and knew that eventually it would happen, and the seeds were planted. So, but people will use that against, you know, trying to just throw the argument out and say, you know, we don't have a proper government, and this is the way it's supposed to be. They're bringing in Marxism. And we, of course, are under the law, which brings us under the law of God. And the king of the court is God, and it's the 12 jurists who are supposed to represent the will of the God. That's the king's bench, and that's why they take oaths and vows. You know, we require, when we get in, we're going to require a vow. The judge can still require his oath. We're good with that. But we require a vow to act with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. That's the vow. And correct each other. You know, so and if we do that, then we're going to have just courts. But that's our battle. That's what we got to get to get those just courts back, and the whole system.
John,
yeah.
And your affiliation and being in these military tribunal courts and going to the point where you've gone now. Oh, geez, I hate that when it happens and you lose your train of thought. Where was I going with this? It goes back to the king and that when the judge said, the judge says to me, why do you object to everything? Well, I object to everything, judge, because it's not my wish.
Mm-hmm.
Have you used that?
Oh, I've heard of that before, and I've been with people who have used that language. I personally haven't used that language, but I don't deny that language, and I don't disagree with it. They don't understand it, okay? And we learned that from Bill. What was it, Bill Thornton? Are you familiar with Bill Thornton? Yeah, we learned that from Bill Thornton.
Oh yeah.
Bill Thornton had a lot of good stuff, but one of the problems he had a very specific premise that really hurt his position, and that is that he thinks that you and I or anyone else is the king of the court. The king of the court is God, not us, not me, not you. The king of the court is God, and that's a key point. And now, so the tribunal, the 12 individuals who sit on that bench, they're supposed to represent the will of the king of the court, acting with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And when you act in that process, then you can really give justice, okay? You can look at all the facts. And, you know, anytime you examine a situation, if there's enough facts there to, you know, prove the case, it'll be seen. And if it's not enough facts to prove the case, that'll be seen too. But we don't need, their legislative, their codes and statutes and all that stuff. And that has nothing to do with us. That has nothing to do with common law.
That's legalism.
That's right. Exactly. I just saw something. Yeah. I was watching something on TV, and in this court case where an argument was being made, and it was a jury trial, okay, and the case was won by the plaintiff, And it was a righteous case, and it was a, you know, it was a righteous decision. The jury came back with a good decision and gave a whole bunch of money. But then they went to an appeal. You know, from when you open a court of record, there is no appeal from a court of record. Unless you can show that there was a some kind of a violation of someone's rights in that case, court case, there is no appeal, okay? But that's how they operate, you know? They tried to get the judge to overturn it and to dismiss it for, you know, at least the penalty because it was so exorbitant, and the judge denied that. But just the fact that they can even try that, you know, it just shows how the system works. Again, this was just a TV program, but it does work this way. They actually do. I've seen and heard of cases where the judge overruled the jury and threw the jury decision out. Who is that guy that thinks he's God, you know?
He's an administrator in that courtroom. That's all.
That's
he
all
is,
he is. That's it. Traffic yes. cop. Uh-huh. Nothing more. Nothing uh-huh. less.
So. Judge or John, I'd like to conclude on this. I've been having in my mind that I want to do a one-page paper, and that one-page paper the title of subject matter of it would be sovereignty and. And when I speak of sovereignty, I speak of the dominion. We have to go to the beginning. It all comes from God. We agree 100% on that, that God gave man dominion on this earth and it calls us kings and queens and actually gave us a sovereignty within his sovereignty. He is the ultimate sovereign, but as long as we in his civil system, which is basically do no harm to my image, which is man and woman, and do no harm to private property of man and women, being the beginning of civil structure, coming down into the areas of the kingships and bringing the Magna Carta into it, the Magna Carta flowing into the Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights flowing into the Declaration of Independence, and the Declaration of Independence anchoring itself in the Constitution. And so as man had dominion, there's nothing lawfully that can take the dominion of the man away unless he goes against God's principles. And so these modern forms of government, They came after and to I guess expound on that, the Constitution was put together by the people and predominantly by the people, our founding fathers, which many of them were divinely led people
mm-hmm.
that put this country together. So, in essence, to conclude, as I'm just about ready to losing my earbuds here. this government cannot supersede the human being created, human being created by God. God gave.
Well, absolutely.
Dominion.
Yeah, Jefferson said that. How did he put it? I forget about exactly how he put it, but he said something about it being broken only but by God's wrath. Okay, only God can break the agreement that we have made. We have a covenant with God, and that's the Declaration of Independence. If you read it very carefully, you'll see it's a covenant with God to be under his liberty, to be under his justice, to be under his law and not on man's law. And I did write a paper on sovereignty, and I found it even deeper on that particular paper in my book. I've got 30 memorandums in that book that I wrote, and one of them really focuses in on sovereignty. But I do have a memorandum that's up on our website on sovereignty, and I'll just read a paragraph or two, just a little bit here, and you can get a copy of this. I don't know, are you able to see the desktop here?
No.
Or, no? Okay.
No.
But then let me read it, though. Memorandum of Law and Sovereignty. And this we filed this with the courts with many, many memorandums. The purpose of this memorandum is to delineate sovereignty and make it clear to our elected servants that the people are the sovereign and not the government. Government is a creature of law with clipped sovereignty sufficient only enough to exercise their vested powers. We the people, the children of nature's God, receiving our sovereign authority and unalienable rights to create a government by consent whose duty is to secure our rights, not deprive them. By the power and authority vested in we the people via an unbreakable covenant made with God in 1776, we the people via Article 1, Section 1 vested Congress with a well-defined legislative powers and prohibitions. We the people via Article 2, Section 1 vested the executive with well-defined powers and prohibitions. We the people via Article 3, Section 1 vested the judiciary with well-defined powers and prohibitions. We the people ordained and established the Bill of Rights that Congress can never alter. We the people have sovereign immunity from all positive law, also known as human law, regulations, codes, or statutes. We the people are the authority of all law. The unalienable right of the sovereign people to self-government was ordained by God, established in the Declaration of Independence, and ordained by we the people, who are the authority of all law. Any servant who resists these truths wars against the Constitution, the governor of the universe, and the people. It is not government's duty to govern the people's behavior. At the Revolution, the sovereignty transferred to the people, and they are truly the sovereigns of the country. But they are sovereigns without subjects, with none to govern but themselves. The very meaning of sovereignty means that the decree of the sovereign makes the law, and the foreign or statutory courts cannot condemn, influence, persuading sovereign to make the decree. The people of this state, as the successors of a former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. His judges, or God's juries, are the mirror by which king's image is reflected, his righteousness. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the king. His majesty, which is God, in the eye of the law, is always present in all his courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his judges, that's the jury, are the mirror by which the king's image is reflected. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and the source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom, for all government exists and acts, and the laws is the definition and limitation of the power. Now, it goes on quite a bit more. I'm not going to read it all. But that's just part of that memorandum, and you can get a copy of that if you want. If you go to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight grand jury, and click on action against the judiciary. And if you come down a little bit, you'll see about 15 memorandums that we had filed with the court in the action against them, which is an ongoing case and continues. Mm-hmm. And we speak about all the details. So anyway, that's something you can go take a look at. And I know in my book I have a more expounded version of sovereignty.
Okay. So in closing, I'll let the next person get on. But in closing, when a common law person, which is supported by our Constitution as being a common law country, enters a tribunal, military tribunal court system, maritime court system, we enter lawfully. We enter as the law, correct?
That's correct. The people are the lawmakers. Yes. We decide whether, look at anything that's brought up legislative, we can just ignore and throw out. But, you know, there are certain cases where statutes will apply in a court of justice where there's a criminal act that might take place. For instance, let's say someone violated, broke the law by commercially involving themselves in commercial activity, maybe human trafficking or something like that, which is interstate.
Yeah,
the federal government takes mm-hmm. control of that and says, well, we got a case against that person. Well, they can bring a case up in equity, but the moment it becomes criminal, it has to turn into law, okay? It becomes a case of law, and the people have to hear that. And the people can look at the – now they have to consider the statutes and the regulations and the codes that these people were supposed to be acting underneath, In one case where it's human trafficking, obviously they're not necessarily part of the commercial system, but they're doing a commercial activity. But let's say the person was working for in some commercial activity which was interstate, and they broke the regulations and the laws, you know, the statutes that legislated had lawfully written to control that commercial activity, because we gave them the power and authority to do that. And so now they have certain things that they may have written that might be penalties or defined what the violation might be that makes it a criminal act. Well, the people of the jury, they could consider that law, consider part of it or none of it, throw it out altogether and make their own law up, because we make the law. We are the lawmakers. We wrote the Constitution. And it's all about the facts. And the people looking at the facts and trying to make a fair decision, a just decision, to discover what is the right thing to do here. What is the righteous thing? Who is the injured party? How can we restore that injured party? Or what the penalty might be? Was it violent? Was it not violent? You know, in most cases, there shouldn't be a jail sentence involved. It should be restitution somehow, and that's up to the jury to figure that out. They're given all the facts. They can ignore the statutes altogether in an equity criminal court case, okay, because the equity is brought into the case, but it can also be thrown out, equity being the statutes, you know, bringing in the codes, the statutes, the, and the regulations.
Incorporate the commercial codes, yes.
Right. So you see, everything we need to run a really good government is still in place. It's the structure and everything's there. We just got to get rid of the criminals and put people who are statesmen in charge, and we'll do the right thing.
What's your opinion, John, on that D.C. Should be returned to the swamp that it was, and the land given back to the states?
Yeah. Well, obviously, we do need a place where the seat of the federal government is. The Constitution applies for that, provides for
There's been talk, of course. You're privy to this. There's been talk about alternate locations where this may be.
Right. Well, the thing is just think of all the money and everything involved in moving that. Is that what you're talking about? Moving to another place?
I'm talking about removing, basically bulldozing down.
Yeah, I don't think that's a wise thing. I think it's going to cost us a lot of money to do it. We have enough problems as it is. But I don't see the reason to do that. I think what we have to do is put all these people in jail that belong in jail. Remove them from their powers and authorities. Most of them should be executed, in my opinion, but that's going to have to be the decision by a court and on an individual basis. And then we need to take back our structures. Everything we need to run as the United States of America in a just fashion, the way the Constitution says so, is still there in structure, in place. Okay? Mm-hmm. And I don't see any reason to move Washington. I just don't see it. I think it's a waste of time and money, you know. So that's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And to make, you know, I understand the idea, and I know people have spoken about this, but I don't think they're really thinking it out far enough. Let's get government, good government going. You know, and while they're knocking it down, are they going to build it first, or they're going to knock it down and build it after? I mean, where are they going to meet? Look, let's just take our country back.
Well, I understand, but I
see
some philosophy of.
I see a principle, yes.
A principle, yes, because when I look at Washington D.C., once you become educated, you're looking at a foreign country running our country.
Well, but that became that in that, that became in 1872 through the Organic Act of 1872, I think it was.
Act of 1871.
Okay, that's when it became a government within a government. A corporation. But it became a city. How does it put a state within a city within a city. okay? Because they created another city, which became a state and incorporated, and we became Washington, you know, the United States Inc. Okay, and everything from that point forward became corrupt. But everything up to that point was properly structured. The structure is still there. Okay, and why would we want to destroy these very, very expensive, beautiful buildings? Why would we want to do that? It doesn't make sense to me. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, you know, in some ways, I look at that as I look at that as the Roman Empire and a certain aspect of the pillars and some of the locations and how these locations are connected and that they symbolize something that perhaps isn't of purity.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the civil government of the Roman Empire. I mean, there's lots there, but you know, in basics, I didn't want to make this a huge spider web, but in basics, yes, we have to take I do believe wholeheartedly your cause and bringing knowledge to this courtroom one by one by one by one, and I think that would you be under the impression that all of us here are servants to this this fictitional corporational government, and we're all bonded?
Look at all that is fraud.
Yes, yes.
I have no part of any of that. I won't participate in any of that. And I'll call it for what it is, fraud. We do call it for what it is when we go into the courts. We call the fraud for the fraud. And when they use the machinery, the judicial machinery, in order to destroy the individuals coming into that courtroom, then they have committed fraud on the court and are guilty of a felony to begin with. And the penalty, the restitution to the individuals should be in the millions.
Well, as a court of record, the people being the law, I mean, you would have to, if you're going to operate in common law, you're of course operating in common sense also. That, you know, you dictate what, you know, what they have suppressed you from, or what they've robbed you of.
I missed that point. Can you say that point again?
Well, the fictitional government that was created, the Act of 1871.
Right.
At that point, the only thing that they were really concerned about is power and control, and how they control power and control is by wealth. And if they can come at the individuals and make them believe that they owe all these taxes and that they are obligated to be suppressed by all the statutes and codes.
Well, back in the 19th century, in the early part of the 20th century, the United States Supreme Court, there were some good judges in there, and they recognized the de facto government, and they called it exactly that, a de facto government, something that appears mm-hmm. to be but isn't, okay? And it's a de facto right. government. It's not real. It's a fraud. It's fake. It's phony. It's false. It's not real. It has no power, no authority, nothing, although they have seized control, and they are abusing us with those controls. But that doesn't make them just. It doesn't make them right. It doesn't make them lawful. It makes them more criminal, and it brings them to the death penalty is what they deserve.
But yeah, but basically, what I was trying to get across is that it's no more than the legalized crime against the people. So when a person of knowledge that enters
But it's not legalized crime. It's not legal crime. It's still fraud, fake, and phony.
Well, no,
it's a fraud. Well, it's a felony.
Well,
they call it legal. It's not legal. It's not lawful. It's unlawful. It's unjust. Look at
there's a difference between legal and lawful, right?
No, not at all. No, look at the only thing that is legal and lawful is something that is just. That's it. If it's unjust, it's not legal.
Right.
It's not lawful. It has no power.
Right.
It's as if it never was.
100%. Yes.
So,
100%.
No, they try to refer to those. If those arguments are made, and they try to refer it in that way. But that's not going to save them because they're guilty of sin.
Yeah, they teach it legal that legalism is lawfulness.
Right.
But legalism
isn't
lawfulness.
Because they made Rule 2, which abrogated common law, does that make that legal? Absolutely not. It brings forth the repugnancy in its worst way.
Well, it can't be a lawful anyway because they've taken the lawfulness, which is God's law, and turned it into statutes and codes. So therefore, let me make
another point. If you take there's something like 200 and change, 230 or something, forget the exact number, of republics in this world. There is only one natural law republic. Every other republic is not legal, is not lawful.
One nation under God. That's it.
End of subject. Uh-huh. Nothing else to talk about. And now they're operating unlawfully. They're operating. It's not legal what they're doing. It's unlawful.
Yes.
It's abuse
yes.
of the people. And
John, I've been down a rabbit hole long enough to know.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, listen. It's a pleasure talking to you, sir. And I'll let you get to the next speaker. And tell the rest of the crew there. I said hello.
I appreciate the call. Thank you. All right.
Good night.
Good night. Gerard, if you're here and you want to take the mic, let me know. Has Brent ever showed up? We have a couple of people in the queue. We're going to take them in a minute. But did Brent ever show up? And I don't see Gerard around.
No, Gerard left, and I have not seen Brent tonight at all.
Okay. We'll take on our next caller. Okay, we will take Ryan from Michigan. You got the mic.
Hey, this is Ryan from Michigan. I'm doing all right.
Good.
I had joined my case and gone all the way through the process, and it's in the Supreme Court. I went to jury trial by myself, and the jury was stacked and impartial against me. And
did you represent yourself, or did you have a lawyer?
I was by myself.
Did you try to explain to the jury the freedom and the lawfulness or the lawlessness of certain juries? Because that's what I would do. I'd talk to the jury. You talk to them about that they make the law. They got the power and the authority. I would talk to them about the questionnaire that they had that they were asked. Matter of fact, we have a copy of that on our website. And I'd also talk with them about not only the questionnaires, the questions they were asked, but I'd also talk to them about the book, the jurist book, the Federalist Handbook. And I'd go through step by step and to show them all the unlawful positions that are being held in that book and all the unlawful things that have been brought forth in the questioning of the people as a jurist. For instance, they ask questions, do you listen to Fox or do you listen to CNN? Do you have a gun? Or does anybody in your family have a weapon? You know, they ask all kinds of questions. It has nothing to do with anything. Okay, all they're doing is stacking the jury. Exactly what you said. I try to unstack them. Of course, I know the judge would go crazy, but I would try to unstack them.
Well, I'm trying to get another crack at it because it so happened that morning I had car trouble and all my paperwork was in that car, so I got there and I told him I wasn't ready, and he went along anyhow, and I told him I was not prepared, and I read off a couple things, and any time I tried to say anything, they would all scream me out, the judge.
And you were without any lawyer at all, right?
Correct.
Okay, and they have a duty to give you a little bit more of a leeway from their own, process that they've laid out. They're supposed to give you extra, leeway because you're not a lawyer. Obviously they didn't, but that's a position or a point you need to make.
Absolutely.
But if you get your opportunity to get in there, I'm trying to think if I have this paper up on site. I Yes, I do. I don't know exactly where it's at, but it's up on our website where we have a layout of the book itself, the federal jurist handbook that they get. And we go point by point and showing the Constitution and common law and how they have violated each step. They're telling the people one thing, the facts are the other things. One of the things, of course, they say in this handbook is, remember, the judge will decide the law. You only get to decide the facts. Well, that's a lie from hell. I would fix that. I would make that point. I know they'd go, well, look, just by the fact that you'll be arguing with the judge in front of the jury is going to be something to be helpful to you. Okay?
Yeah.
Because he's going to try to silence you. You can't say those things.
Oh, they did.
You know.
They screamed. Oh, yeah. They just screamed and screamed.
Oh,
and
they don't stop. Yeah. They're evil.
Yeah, it was pretty terrible. I had two witnesses with me, and they couldn't believe the steamrolling. But so,
well, the jury, how do you feel the jury took this in?
They were baffled. I mean, I couldn't.
Well, you might be getting them on your side. You know what? In IRS cases can be a real easy one to beat in front of a jury if you know how to bring the right points up, because they don't have any power, any authority, not even in their own legislative acts, you know, in their codes and violations, yeah, their codes and statutes and stuff. When you go through and lay it out, it's very clear. It only has to do with people involved with fuel for airline. What would you call that? Airplane fuel, I'll call it. Okay, tobacco, firearms, and different things of that nature. And if you're not involved in those businesses, a farming that has fuel on the farm, that's what they talk about when you go down the rabbit holes. There's nothing there that applies to the people, nothing. And you could go through that and lay that out, their own statutes, to show that there is no power authority there. Also, there's no jurisdiction, okay? So they have no jurisdiction over it at all. So that was set up in USC 26.
When I asked the judge about the jurisdiction, because I had been getting at it in a court hearing, I asked him, have you answered the jurisdictional challenge? And he said, I have jurisdiction because I say I do. I was like,
yes,
well, I object
exactly
to that. And he goes, well, you can object all day.
Well,
I'm
going
to do what I got to do. And I said, I object to that, too.
The argument you need to be making is to make the point that, look, first of all, you don't go and just object to the jurisdiction without a paper. I always have a paper come in before me, okay? And if he or she doesn't read it, that's their problem. But the point is, I refer back to the paper, and the bottom line is I laid my position out. You don't have jurisdiction. I've proven that on paper and in an affidavit form. And you know what? You're making a ruling here, and the other side hasn't come up to show. Your lawyers, your U.S. attorneys, or if they're prosecutors, whatever case there may be, state or federal, they haven't made any case to object to anything I've said. And you can only rule on what's before this court. You can't go outside of that. You can't bring your own thoughts and ideas in your mind into this. You have to rule what's before you, and what's before you is my affidavit standing alone. So right there, you should recuse yourself, number one. Number two, you already believe you have jurisdiction, so therefore, you know, jurisdiction, once challenged, must be decided, which means you got to look at both sides, okay? You haven't done that, you should recuse yourself, and you can't make any ruling here because someone else has to do that because you already believe you have it and you've just proved that point. You get that all onto the record, and then I'd start pursuing using the machinery of the court. It's called judicial machinery in order to destroy an individual, okay?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's what I would do. It's a criminal act. I'd then go and sue the judge and prosecute it together for conspiracy against me.
Yeah,
bring them
so
into the court.
The people in the jury box knew the cop and the DA personally. So, I mean,
wow.
There was one of the people who worked at the courthouse was in the jury box. It was, but anywho, so I got smashed. The judge read off rules to the jury. Destroyed the impartiality. I objected. So I had to come back for sentencing. On that date, I was called because of the COVID disaster. This is God interceding here. So I had to come back to court like a month later. Well, at that exact time, I had been exposed to COVID, and the state of law said I had to quarantine. So when I called in to say, hey, I have to quarantine. They're like, no, we don't care. Felony bail jumping. Turn yourself in. So
wow. What were the charges? What would there's a federal court, right? What were they coming out after?
State court. Possession of THC, 6 grams. Mm-hmm. And they want like 12 years in prison for all this. But
they're insane.
This is an old boys club. This is Marinette, Wisconsin. It's one of the dirtiest old boys club everywhere, anywhere. They're just
the moment a statue stands up, you're not in a court of law. Once they bring a statue into the game, you're not in a court of law unless you are involved in some commercial activity or you work for an agency that you're under those statutes, those codes. Then they can apply them to you, but if they're going to take criminal action against you, then they have to then move that into a court of law, and a jury gets to decide whether they like those codes or not. But criminal code has nothing to do with anyone, though, because that criminal code that you'll find is under USC 18. Mm-hmm. And that the jurisdiction of USC 18 has nothing to do with we the people. It's defined as equity.
Absolutely believe you're correct on that. Mm-hmm. So eventually they catch up with me. They caught up with me on May 2nd. I got pulled over in Michigan for a taillight being out on my four-wheeler. And he runs my name, and he's like, you got a warrant out. So I go to jail for that warrant, held without a bond, held without this and that, and extradition. And I just got out last week. My family all pitched in and got me a lawyer because they don't understand what this is all about. And they just don't want to see me rotting.
And this is the first criminal charge against you, right?
Correct.
You have no past record, number one.
Well, I do. They're saying it's second offense.
What was the first offense?
Like 6 years ago.
I mean, was that also drugs?
It was THC. It's my right, so I'm engaging in it with impunity.
Absolutely. You know? Look, they have no authority to make any decision for you what you put in your body or not. Look, if a person wants to stick a needle in their arm, I mean, I tried to tell them, hey, don't, you know, heroin or something, you know, I try to convince them not to do it. But if that's what they want to do, then you can't stop someone from that. That's their liberty to do that. It's not a crime.
So what's going on here is now $25,000 cash bail. My family all had to chip in to get me out. And on Wednesday, I have the preliminary hearing for this bail jumping. And they want to know why for a year that I did not contact the court. I mean, you covered a lot of good things so far already on the show. But mm-hmm. I'm just curious if you have any other firepower that, because my lawyer, this new lawyer, he's crazy. He's like, I told him, you know, I can't pick up a gun and go fight a war for freedom. They all died and did all that. And all I can do is fight for freedom here doing this. And mm-hmm. he's, you know, he's got a lot of military family, so he's on board with all. He wants me to, like, intern for him. And
is he a bar attorney?
Yeah.
Okay. Remember, they've been trained in as minions of the New World Order. You're familiar with the original 13th Amendment back in 1819 or something? Yeah.
Correct.
You know, look at no bar attorney should be operating in any court on American soil anywhere. At all, anywhere, ever. All judges, anybody that belongs to the bar, when we get to the other side, they got to leave the bar. We'll give them that opportunity to leave the bar and leave all their nonsense behind, because we got to go to common law, and they better learn what common law is all about and how it operates. You know, these people that there are lawyers that are not bar attorneys, very few, though, because in most places the bar won't permit them to practice law in the courts, and that's a major problem. But the bar is the reason for every problem America is facing. They have destroyed us on every place, economically, politically, our medical system, our FDA, our food, everything. They've destroyed everything.
So this guy he's a true patriot, and it's like he's realizing that he's been intentionally denied a proper education on things.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going to bring up all the people that had COVID up on the stand and testify. He's going to have my mom testify about my dad's car accident that happened. You know, my dad's dying on his deathbed, and I'm supposed to go turn myself into jail during a national emergency? You know, it's it's not going to happen. And then we got all the other
things. Meanwhile, they were releasing a lot of people, too, from jail because of the COVID.
Yeah.
You know?
So, they're, I mean, I'm just looking for more firepower to say why I'm not turning myself in. And it's, you covered a lot of it already in the show. And
yeah, and you can get this recording after the program's over. This recording will be uploaded, so you can come back and listen to some of those things and make some notes. But take a look at our memorandums. There may be a lot of things in the memorandums you'll be able to use here on our website that's under grand jury. So,
absolutely.
Particularly against the judiciary. So.
And, I mean, it's been moved. Why would I come back to a court that I don't consent to? I'm not...
Right, they don't have jurisdiction, and I don't know if he'll go as far to challenge that jurisdiction, because once a statute is in play, you're in jurisdictions unknown.
Yeah.
And they won't tell you.
He's willing to shout out the things that I want to say because of, you know.
Well, he better be careful, because they will go after him, too. You know, look what that. Are you familiar with the Bundy case out there, out west, and Lavoie Finucane, and the trials that took place with the Bundys.
Scary. Very scary stuff.
At the conclusion, you know, they had the jury found them not guilty, all them people. And at the conclusion, they tried to seize these people to bring them to another state for other charges, and those warrants weren't even out yet. And the lawyer was trying to make the case that you can't take these people back into custody. They've just been released and freed. And they tased this guy in court.
Jeez.
Okay? And nothing was done about that. I haven't heard anything done about that.
Yeah, so I'm figuring just to keep my mouth shut and let this guy do his thing. And hopefully he can get us a new trial, and then I can do all the good magic on the next jury.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can say a prayer for you. Hopefully things will go well.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah. I'm definitely under satanic attack.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for everything you're doing.
All right. Well, thanks God for the bless. Call, Ryan. Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Okay. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? *6 and 1. We'll take our next caller, Jim. Pennsylvania Jim. Go right ahead.
Good evening.
Jim?
Yeah, I'm here. I have a question and a comment tonight. Should we go into the local magistrate's court as court observers if the defendant's attorney is very apprehensive about having court observers?
Well, if the person who's being charged with something or whatever the case may be wants you there, then yeah, why not? To hell with the attorney. You're there only to write affidavits and give it to the individual, and they'll do what they think they need to or want to do it with, you know. But attorneys play ball with the court. They go according to the criminal activities of the court.
Okay, just I wasn't sure, you know, what we you know. I want to help. You know, she's our chairperson of our courtroom. Committee of Safety, and she got charged with not wearing a mask at a local store.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. And, you know, I'm sure, I've seen in other states, and they probably all the states have them, that have required masks. Usually the governor's made the requirement, which it's not lawful anyway. He doesn't get to command the people. He only gets to command the agencies that are under his authority and the individuals within those agencies. But he has no power or authority over the people to tell them that they have to wear masks or do anything. But in any event, most of them, if not all of them, put in a clause concerning the fact if you can tolerate a mask. Now, you don't necessarily have to have a registered or noted medical problem. You can just have a problem not wearing a mask and make the point that, hey, I can't tolerate a mask and I'm not wearing it. And there is a study that just came out recently about these masks, and that they had all kinds of bacteria and all kinds of things on it. I mentioned it earlier. You can see it on, I think it was X22 that laid that out, x22report.com, over the past couple of days ago or something. But, you know, you can grab a hold of that study and take a look at it and give them that as ammo to them. But look at the jurisdiction. That court has no jurisdiction. Of course, they think they do. It's probably, what is it, a town court? County court?
JP, I guess.
In a village or a town or something?
Yeah, township.
Yeah. I mean, that's not even a court of record. They have no power or authority to fine or incarcerate. I mean, they do it all day long, but they don't have that power. You know, they run traffic court, and again, traffic court, that's equity, has nothing to do with the people. And when they put people in jail in those courts, they have no power to fine or incarcerate.
John, I think earlier you mentioned, well, what they did to her is they charged her with disorderly conduct and not wearing a mask, but I think they added another federal charge. And I think you mentioned a federal charge earlier tonight.
Yeah, I don't recall. But how would they make a federal charge? What kind of a federal charge would they make?
That's what I thought they, you know, they make this stuff up, or I'm not sure, but
they make everything up.
They added everything up. And I think they're probably, like you said, it's the local court. They're probably going to have to make her go to the common pleas court, county court.
Well, that's what they should do, is move it to start off moving it to the state, not the county. Move it to the state court for cause.
Yeah.
Okay, they're violating your right in jurisdictions unknown. Of course, that may not or probably won't be understood in the state court either. But you can build a case, and it has to be decided, and then you have an appeal process. And you can work your way up, and if you collect enough evidence of fraud using the judicial machinery, then you can go after the judges. I mean, you can extend this thing.
Well, I'll mention that to her tomorrow. We meet, our Committee of Safety meets tomorrow night. But I also had another comment. I don't know if I mentioned before, but you know that the Democrats, when they took charge in January, their first House bill and Senate bill was to make the state election laws. It's H.R. 1 and S. 1, Senate 1. And everybody's saying to have your Congress, contact your Congress members to oppose H.R. 1 and S. 1. That's how important it was. It was the first one that they made, submitted in January. So if our listeners want to contact their Congress members to let them urge them to oppose H.R. 1 and S. 1.
Yeah, what exactly is H.R. 1 and S. 1?
The feds are going to make the state election rules.
Oh, that's absurd.
Well, it's unconstitutional.
Well, you know, there is a certain, there's a certain framework, and it's found just injustice anyway on how that should work. I mean, but when it comes to the federal election, you know, they should have some say in it. But basically, yeah, it's up to the states to make everything work well. But look, that's not going to go nowhere. That's, you know, I know it may pass and go through the process, but it's going to be deleted, you know, because it just, the law was there in the beginning, the proper laws in order to protect the voting, but they just didn't follow the law.
Yeah, it's that simple, but I try to do everything just the right way, and then you know, see what happens. But I've contacted my Congress members and Biden. You know, postcards, and Biden doesn't have a fax machine.
They ain't gonna listen to you.
I don't know. Anyways, I don't know if it's worth it or not. But I still let all my Congress members know, and Biden, what I'm thinking. But anyways, that's all I had tonight, John. Just want to let you know about
appreciate
one.
It. Yeah, just make sure that the person who's in the court, the defendant, is in agreement with what you want to do. And if they're in agreement, to hell with the lawyer. If they still say, hey, to hell with the lawyer.
Yeah, we plan to get on it. I want to be a court observer. I want to see what's going on, you know, learn.
Absolutely. And write an affidavit.
Yeah.
Give it to the person and let them do what they want to do with it.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Okay, anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. star 6 and a 1. Dan from North Carolina, how you doing, Dan?
Are you hearing me okay, Mr. John?
You got it. Go ahead.
I hope you saw the email that I sent in to questions, and I just got back on this call successfully, maybe 8 minutes after 11. Maybe about approximately 30 minutes or so. Pardon?
What was the question? We did go through some questions earlier that came into the mail, but go ahead.
Oh, no. Well, I got you. But anyway, I didn't know any other way to communicate with you guys except to try to the question approach. About 30-some minutes or so ago, while you made a statement there that there was only one person in the queue, I'm pretty sure that was me. And
you were
I don't
in
know
there,
what
but then
happened,
you didn't respond. Yeah.
No. The call got aborted, and so then from there on, I tried I don't know how many times to connect back up, and all I could do is go to star 6, and it wouldn't allow me. The auto attendant is where the problem is. Wouldn't allow me. And the same thing happened last week, and it's happened. I don't know. Maybe about a month ago, a couple of weeks there, that I same situation, and it's for the lack of what I call a second in parliamentary procedure. I'm kidding you. Where that the attendant doesn't come on there and say, if you would like to ask your question, hit 1. You know, I've already was star 6. And just so happened a while ago, about 10 minutes ago, 11 minutes ago, when I tried back to get back on the call after I'd done the email out to you guys, I even called Mr. Jan's number and left him a voice message. Up in Philadelphia area, but anyway, this has happened, and I don't know what the remedy's going
to
be.
So let me see if I understand. So when you get into the call, you're able to get onto the call, but when you hit star 6, it doesn't say to hit the 1 to get into the queue.
Absolutely, but about 11 minutes or so back, the auto attendant did say that I was not correctly into the conference, and then stated to hit the one, I've already hit star 6, but did come on there and say hit the 1 if I wanted to be in the queue. So somehow or another, it finally, I made a bunch of calls, you know, in
We'll file a complaint and see if they can figure out what's going on.
Well, anyway.
If anybody else is experiencing that, let us know also. I know you were in the queue earlier, and when we opened up your mic, you didn't respond.
I was already aborted. No fault to you or, you know, a National Liberty Alliance, I assure you. It was that the call got aborted. Nevertheless, I didn't have the benefit to hear all of what the gentleman before, just a little bit, that you were giving some good understanding with this man. And I think it had some stem of past charges of something to do with, illegal substance. I'll just be polite about it. Irregardless, what I did detect, seemingly, that I heard maybe this gentleman say, was that he was subjected to, and this might help him, violation of the 8th Amendment has to do with a reasonable bond. And that's one angle that he can come with. The other angle is that he was all unlawfully held in a detainer, and I didn't hear whether he got the Miranda rights and a situation timely, so it didn't sound like he did. That would be a hearing before a judge. And then on the other side of the nickel is that a person is innocent until they're proven guilty, and for them to use past situations, which could be trumped up charges, by the way, against this man, way back in the past and beating him up this latest episode unlawfully. A man is innocent until he's proven guilty, and if they violated his due process of law, he has several different situations if they unduly kept him incarcerated. I don't know whether that man knows this or not, but I'm about to finish with this because I know, Mr. John, I'm pretty sure you were probably very thorough with him and trying to help him. But I will tell that gentleman that, for one thing, they stole his property. And his property, you don't have to own the King Ranch in Texas. You don't have to own, some house or something that unsurmountable people have come on this conference where this so-called municipalities is stealing their home. No, your property is exactly your liberty. And they stole his liberty by putting him in through the maneuvers and stealing his property. And he can bring a charge for the harassment and malicious process that they've subjected him into, the violation of the Eighth Amendment, I'm almost certain is there, of unreasonable bond that they've set for him because of prejudicial and bias situations that apparently, coming from that gentleman's conference tonight, back to you and answers, is evident there. I hope this might help him a little bit. And one other thing for sure, I don't know if it was me, I would be challenging their jurisdiction, and I would carry that to the Hilton. And in other words, I would carry that challenge right on to a federal court of record, and for a trial by, I would demand for a trial by jury. There might be a few other things, but I'm sure, Mr. John, you have probably really gave that man some very good things to think about.
Well, that's a good point. The jurisdiction, I think, is the key, you know.
So, yes, sir.
What he should do is open a common law court, open a court of record within there, because this is his right and his authority. Obviously, he's in a court of unknown jurisdiction, so therefore he should open that court of record. Once he opens that court of record, then at that point in time, if they continue to assault him, he can sue that court directly from his court within that court against that court. So again, you go after the judge and after the prosecutors and after everybody.
And I hope the gentleman, very good, well stated, Mr. John, always by you. And in closing on this, would be no question about it. This man's civil rights have been violated. He would be wise to try to get a hold of our very eminent presenter, Mr. Brent. I can't be an agent for Mr. Brent or anything like that, but I can tell you right now, it wouldn't be a bad idea for this man to and his attorney to try to get with Mr. Brent and or some attorneys that would be quite capable and to handle things as you and I just mentioned, especially you.
Right. All right, aside he didn't have an attorney, so...
It's
probably a good thing on the one hand. I mean, maybe, you know, if he came in with an attorney, maybe they play ball with him, but that's dangerous also because, you know, he's going to work with them to put him in jail. And so it's a hard thing to call, and it's very difficult to go in by yourself to make your argument, and you have to, you know, really be bold. And persistent and do a lot of homework and look at every point they're bringing up and bring up tremendous amounts of positions and, you know, against them that you can. So it's difficult.
Yes, he would have to be very polished, like you're saying, to really research the situation of whether they that particular court probably doesn't have jurisdiction over him, and then he.
Oh, they definitely don't. They definitely don't because they charged him with a statute, and automatically has nothing to do with me. That's nothing to do with me. You know, hey.
All right, we better move on because yep. I want to be fair to a few others. Let me tell you, Mr. John, thank you for many, many hours of tutoring me especially and many others that out there really needed this across this land. Folks, you have no clue of how important National Liberty Alliance can be at any one given moment for you, for defense for your family and defense for your personal self. You have to have now almost legal person with you standing there watching you cross the street, or you might be in trouble just crossing the regular street, providing you got right of way. Well, nevertheless, I want to thank you and all the others behind the scenes of National Liberty Alliance. What I'm referring to is after the many years of you laboring what I call sweat equity and then trying to talk some good sense in all of us out here with what is legal and what is right and what is, you know, according to our Constitution and even our Heavenly Father, for that matter. So after saying that, I want you to know that I prevailed in U.S. District Court in Wilmington on June the 10th. You're not going to believe, that there was a, I'm not going to call the name on this national conference of a legal firm, but they had my documents about 4 to 5 weeks, maybe six, but at least 4 to 5 weeks in advance of the hearing on the June the 10th in U.S. District Court in Wilmington. Nevertheless, on the day before, while one of the attorneys that whole week is in on a vacation, I was carrying certified documents, cost me about $600 to prove my case that was going to be heard on the 10th. And about 40 years of controversy, and I think that's enough to say. I hope this is a good testament to any of you folks out there. Please hear me when I tell you that this particular law firm, the day before, while I'm bringing certified documents to help that law firm for the next day, they would have normally would been in line with a continuance because they would have been a new firm on record, been a piece of cake. I even had the motions and everything else all fixed up for them. But irregardless, the day before that I went there, which was on the June the 9th, about 2, 3 o'clock in the evening, Eastern Standard Time, and I was surprised beyond my dreams or imagination. And they handed me and quickly they drafted something in there, and they first told me, sent out all kind of ladies out there in this law office, in closing with you, and stating that that their law firm was not going to handle this case. Then there was a gentleman come out there, elder gentleman, and said that his law firm was not going to handle his case. And I asked him point blank, who was he? He says, he's so-and-so, this is his law firm. I said, are you an attorney? He said, no. And I want you folks to hear this. You cannot own or declare that you are the main litigant in a law firm and not be an attorney, because it is mandatory for that party that is coming out there and saying, this is my law firm, that he would have to be an officer of a court, and he cannot be an officer of these corrupt courts without being an attorney of record in regard to the the courts, as to the particular county. As you know, there's what, 3,100 or 314 or something like that counties. Well, anyway, this particular county here is two of which are common law in South Carolina. The whole state and North Carolina are both two of 41 common law states on top of everything else. And I will close with this. We need to move to get the rest of the nine other cows out there or calves are out there in the out there in the field somewhere that need some help, and bring them home to the truth to get the other nine join up with the 41. But I just wanted you guys to understand that this man came out and stated that was his law firm, and then when I got to question him, all of a sudden, he wasn't even an attorney. You will have any kind of bunch of you-know-what malarkey told to you by these so-called claiming they got that of the right of nobility. That's my statement for tonight, and so I hope this will help a lot of people.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it, and appreciate the kind words. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah. Oh, you deserve it. Thank you, and all the rest. They're associated with National Liberty Alliance.
Thank you.
Organization.
Okay, let us take our next caller. We'll go with Cynthia from Arizona. You got the mic. Go ahead, Cynthia.
Okay. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, I heard the last guy said, I'm just going to piggyback off of what the just said just now. And yep. I want him to look up the one who was on the phone. This is pivotal. It's under the Department of Justice. It's called the Ultimate Users Act. They cannot take him to jail. It's Title 21 United States Code Controlled Substance Act. It's called the Ultimate Users, meaning the police officer, if they find any kind of drugs or anything on you, basically they're just supposed to take it from you and deposit it in. You know, they're supposed to have.
You said this is called the Ultimate User.
It's called the Ultimate Users Act, and that will shut that day. If this case has to do with any kind of drugs, I think I heard him say that.
Yep.
Ultimate Users Act, it's Title 21, United States Code, USC, control, under the Controlled Substance Act. Just go to the Diversion Control Division of the Department of Justice and Drug Enforcement Administration and just start put in there Ultimate Users Act. They put it out after, I think it was when the Bush was coming back from Noriega, and they were bringing all that crap back. I think it was Bush bringing it back. They put this out. So really, they're not supposed to be taking anyone to jail. They're supposed to collect it, and the police officers are not supposed to be collecting it. It's supposed to be people like doctors and pharmacists, or the person can take if he has it with him, he could take it and you know, throw it away for his decedent. So you know what a decedent is, right?
Well, I'm not sure, but I got to definitely take a look into this, but go ahead.
Yeah, look it up. Just look it up. It's, I've been reading it. But what they're supposed to do, so I was asking my friends, so basically, because I was looking up because I have a friend in jail, and he has it for dangerous drugs. Dangerous drugs.
Yeah, now this is when you bring up Title 21, you're talking about federal, correct?
Yeah, it's federal, yeah. And it's under the Ultimate
But he's in a state court, but it should
but
be
says,
the whole poll. Yes.
Yeah, but if he reads the whole thing, it talks about federal or state courts.
Right, he should be able to uphold anyway.
Yeah, it says federal or state courts. So just that alone, whatever they found on him, they're not even supposed to be. And do they know about this act? I don't know if they do, but, you know, if he brings it to their attention or tell his attorney to bring it to their attention, they have to throw a case out. Because they shouldn't even be charging with it.
Well, you're absolutely right. They shouldn't be anyway.
Anyways, but we got to use their laws against them.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that they put together.
Well, we'll use what we can against them, absolutely. But
Right. So I just wanted to share that with him. I didn't have anything, because I did contact that. I'm online now. So I contacted someone in Yakapedia County. I think that's in Flagstaff. So I'm going to, you know, she I guess she's looking for a common law. It says she's looking for a common law court. So I just put my information in and told her that, you know, I'm here. You need someone to help, because she's doing court by herself. You know, two heads are better than one. And so I did go there.
So well, you know, also,
bit,
also.
I feel
also,
a little better now.
Also, he can use Article 4 of the Constitution, Section 1. Talks about full faith and credit given to each state, the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. So, therefore, you know, if there are, say, states that do not allow this to become a criminal act, you can use those positions from those states.
And you know what kills me? I think I think I heard you say that they make stuff up. That is so true. They make stuff up.
Oh, yeah, right off, right there off the bench.
My sister and I sent stuff in. I sent my evidence in, and they turned around and used it for their evidence.
Yeah, they are unbelievable, these people. They make it up right off the spot. Anything to make the, you know, to fix their you know, their case, so it runs their way.
Because they don't, first of all, you know, and even like people don't know about exculpatory evidence. The prosecution always has exculpatory evidence, always has to exonerate the alleged defendant, right? But they never bring it up. But then people don't know how to ask. When you're saying ask the right questions, I don't know if you said that. But a lot of people don't know that. They always have it, and they make stuff up as they go. Like this case, I have. I mean, like really? But I'm going to fight this to the death. I mean, I'm not. I mean, I have someone help me, and I'm just not going to, because I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was sleeping in my truck, and I'm just not going to accept a guilty anything because it messes up my life for good. Right. You know, I think what the one lady said, I'm not going to do that because they should. And then I found out that the Arizona revised statutes or any revised statutes don't even apply to us. They apply to the corporation. They're the bylaws for them. How did that happen that they're now they flipped it on us?
Well, it applies to, let's use it from the perspective or the position of government agencies and agents within those agencies. Now, I know they are incorporated, but really, still, the agency is an agency, and you have the true common law side of that, whether it may be constitutional or unconstitutional for that particular agency to even exist, that's another question. But nevertheless, even though these agencies, because all of these codes and statutes are written for government agents and agencies, commercial
activities. I thought that I had understood that they were written for them to protect us from, to protect
them. That's right. Well, yeah, well, we've given them the authority to control that and make sure things run properly, and that's why we give them the authority to write statutes, codes, and regulations for those
we've
agents.
We've also been slumbering. The people have gone to sleep. We put people in...
And then, they turned it around and used it against us, right?
Right, they literally, some of them look at like I talked to this attorney because I defend myself, but they wanted to do a Rule 11 on me, which is crazy because I filed a jurisdictional challenge, right? And so I didn't figure it out first. Oh, I said okay, I filed it against the one judge. So what he did was he brought another commissioner in basically to say, okay, well, you know, we're gonna rule. This because he can't do it because he can't go any further until he makes sure he has to make sure he has jurisdiction. He can't even go any further in the case. Period.
Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. Absolutely.
It must be decided, right. But so what they did, I said, so I objected to it. I did object to it, but they did what they wanted to do. And I went to these doctors and I basically told them, I mean, I don't have anything to talk. I'm not going to answer any of your questions. And when they were asking me questions, I start asking them questions.
Also, the jurisdiction, once you, especially when you challenge, the jurisdiction is supposed to be right up on the case. They're supposed to establish and write it up right on the paperwork itself what the jurisdiction is. Okay.
Well, they never do. They're doing something. Well, you know what? I know what they're doing because they're criminal. But
yeah,
so
that's exactly what they are. It's all about money.
Yeah, it's criminal. They're trying to. They think that they're gonna. Because this is the going. They think that I'm gonna give in. But see, I've studied so much. It's kind of like when you know better, you do better. And that's where I'm at today. I know better. I'm not going to even. I'm not going to let them bully me or railroad me into what they want me to do. Mm-hmm. Now, see, when I was in jail, I had someone. Someone got me out. But then what I was going to do is I was going to sign a plea bargain and then get out. And then I know that you could. Then I know you could basically, I could withdraw it, but I didn't have to do that. And so when I talked to the judge, he says, well, I put in a conditional acceptance for value. I filed tons of motions to dismiss. Those are some of the stuff I was doing. I filed a bill particular because I wanted to know what is the nature and the cause. I wanted to file a complaint against the police officers because I didn't give them a warrant. I didn't give them permission to search my truck. So they suppressed all that. They denied every last bit of that, even to right now. I'm like, oh, really? So now this looks like you guys are attempting to railroad me. That's what it looks like. And so then what the judge says, he says, well, these documents, these are all civil. I said, yeah, but you also offered me, I was offered a contract. And only in civil court, it's contract. Otherwise, where's the interparty?
Mm-hmm.
And it's criminal. You're saying it's criminal. I said, you're right, Your Honor, but where's the inter party? The prosecution? I know the prosecution can't be the inter party. And then
that's another key point for the individual that's,
right.
That,
the prosecution cannot be. It's called Trinzi versus Pagliaro.
Right. Where is
they
the
cannot be the inter party. And they have no standing in the court, really.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, we'll look at, we got one other caller, and we're coming up to the end.
Okay, I just wanted to share that
with you
and whoever that person is. And yeah, because there's a lot of stuff in the law that's been hidden from us so they can do what they're doing. Thanks a lot. Your name is John, right?
John, yeah. Thanks, Cynthia.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Okay, let's take Barbara from New York. You got the mic. We got maybe 9 minutes left.
Hi, thanks, John. This is Barbara from New York. I had a question about, I was listening to Dr. Peter McCullough, who's testified before Congress. I don't know if you know him. He's really good. He's very accurate, and he brings up the law, and he seems to really know stuff. And he was talking about the vaccination mandates at hospitals and colleges and universities. And he's very involved with this, and he said that first he described the hospitals, and he said that that for all the ones that he's been involved with, that there's been none that he's aware of that had actual vaccination policies for their employers in their compliance departments, filed formal signed policies filed in their compliance department. And then he said for the universities and colleges, everyone that he was aware of, they didn't have it. And he said that when you don't have a formal policy, he said the reason that people are, these institutions are not doing it is nobody wants it on paper that they are requiring research or an experiment from either the students or the employees, because it's an experiment and they just don't want to sign off on it. And he said that by definition, if you do not have a formal policy on file in your compliance department, that it is called harassment or intimidation. And he said that he got, in terms of the colleges and universities, he got the situation turned around for Louisiana State and the Los Angeles School District and some places in Texas because they didn't have it. So I wrote to my son's college, and I said, could you please send me a copy of your vaccination mandate that you have filed in your compliance department. And so I wrote to the ethics-compliance officer, and she wrote back to me, and she sent me the email that the dean of students, there were two emails, one from the dean of students and one from the president, that they sent out to the students. And it's not formal at all. So I need to come back to them, but I don't really know. I know it's not what she sent me is not formal, but I don't know what it would look like. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, look, even if they had a policy, and the policy is not the law, and they can't deny access because of some policy that they make that's unlawful to begin with. And you know, anybody, and if they do have a policy and people go and get the vaccine and they get sick from it or someone dies from it, they're liable at that point for requiring that to be.
I think so too.
This is a form of ultimately corporatism, which is Nazism. Corporatism, the government becomes part and partner with the corporations, and the corporations really are running the show. But at this point, ultimately, of course, the New World Order is governing all of them. But that's what it's all about. They're trying to turn the corporations to force the people to take these you know, vaccines, and if they don't, then they get fired or they can't work or what, or they can't have access to something or get into school or whatever the case may be. And that's a lawsuit right there. And again, in these environments, you know, the judicial environments we have today, it would be very difficult to win them. There could be one, but very, very difficult to win them. But definitely on the other side, they will be won.
Yeah, it's. I think I've heard some statements that they're not liable according to statutory law.
It doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with us. Yeah, it has nothing to do with us. Look, we're under common law. It doesn't matter what they think, what they do, and what they said. It, you know, the Rules Enabling Act of 1934 is meaningless to us. It has no power, no authority. They had no power, no authority. Even to write that for the equity courts, they didn't have the power because equity courts were under common law, and they were under the rules of the common law. You know, they're to operate to some degree under common law with logic and a sense of, you know, honor and justice and mercy. They're supposed to operate that way no matter what. They call it equity. So let's call it equity, but it's really common law. Now, they can make their statutes to control the and the regulations to control the individuals that work for the government agencies, that whether it be federal or state. And they can also, because we gave them that power and authority to do that, so they keep them, you know, under control, that they don't get out of control, because they can get out of control. That's why we gave them that power. But if it is unlawful, it's unlawful, and any jury can just, you know, do away with it. They can nullify it. But
constitutionally, it's a train wreck. It's ridiculous. But there's also a very strong statutory argument against it too, because you have informed consent in the Code of Federal Regulations, and you've got you may for an experiment, you may reject it in the U.S. Code in 21 U.S.C. 360. So there's a very strong argument for it there. So I feel like they have no authority. You know,
they don't.
They have no authority. The government doesn't.
But as long as the people believe they have authority, they have.
Right. Exactly.
It's de facto.
I think it kind of comes down to contracts, because all we did was, back when things were relatively normal, my son enrolled as a freshman. We didn't sign when he did that. We didn't sign any. You know, the enrollment contract didn't say yes. You
right, and that policy wasn't there when he started, right?
Yes, absolutely not there.
And the whole idea and all that stuff and you know, wasn't there. So now all of a sudden this thing comes about, and now they're trying to apply it. But you know, you can make the argument, hey, I fall under the grandfather law.
Grandfather law, okay.
Yeah.
Add that in.
I mean, I'm already operating in this situation. Now you're putting something upon me that's not part of what you know was when I started. So you know. That could be an argument, maybe.
I wrote them it wasn't too long. I think it was the right length, and where I cited all the law, and so they came back with, everyone has a different perspective and a different, you know, whatever, but we're following the American College of Health. Well, they don't engage me on what the actual U.S. code is.
There is nothing. There's nothing.
They don't have to do that.
There's nothing there anyway.
Well, I don't know. I think you can, if it's an experiment, you can refuse it.
Nobody can require you to do anything when it comes to your medical conditions or your personal body. You cannot be forced to do anything. No matter what it is, the idea that that there's some kind of pandemic. There is never has been the pandemic. You know,
it's
people
fraud.
Who died. I just heard recently. I don't know. I heard this from one source. I don't know how true it is. But the actual test that was being taken that they were using in order to discover, and I'm sure there was probably more than one, whether a person had COVID or not. The individual who created that test or was involved in creating that test said that it was not meant to look for COVID.
Yes.
So it didn't even work anyway.
Terry Muller.
People who died from the flu. People who got sick and was hospitalized because of the flu. People who got sick and wasn't hospitalized, they just had the flu.
No, so the school now for like over a year has been engaged in the fraud of the PCR test. The PCR test is pure fraud. It's been proven in court in Germany, Austria, and apparently it's just about to be proven in the United States by 22 scientists who know a lot more than the college administration that I'm dealing with. And I'm just going to say no. You know, you have no authority. I don't know what I'm going to say more than that, but it's just a school, and they're saying, you know, we can do this medical procedure. Forget it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's a battle we got to fight, but I'll tell you what, I think we get to the other side, you're going to win. The problem is a lot of these people that are pushing all this stuff, they're all going to be in jail. So.
I think this one lawyer, you know, Rainer Fulnick, do you know? He's got this worldwide a tort case, he calls it, it's based on the COVID test, saying that it's deceptive practices, it's fraud. And he says that's the easiest way to go at it. And he says that someone asked him, well, how about the drug companies? Are they really going to get off? And he said, he has this whole cast of witnesses who say that they're going to stay with him to the end. And he said, we have two insiders from the WHO, and they tell us that we can get them on willful misconduct because they tell them what was said at meetings. So it could be the drug companies could also, pay for what they did, which I think would be really good.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
All right. Well, appreciate the call. I'm going to close down now. I'm not. My clock is all screwed up here, and I got like 10:33. I think it must be, actually I had 11 o'clock, but I know it's got to be midnight. What time do you have?
I have 6 minutes before midnight.
Oh, okay. Well, we got a few more minutes then. Go ahead, if you want to add anything else.
Well, what do you think of policy? What do you imagine a policy would look like? How would I say, look, you know, what you're doing is...
Look, there could be no policy that requires me to put or you to put anything into your body, no matter what it is. And you know, the big argument that they can understand and they don't know what to do with is the fact that it is experimental, you know? So, I mean, right there and then, that kind of trips them up a little bit, so you can use that.
I said in my letter a few times, I said, you know, this has got to be informed consent, and you keep putting in your emails to the students that it's a vaccination and that it keeps the so-called disease from being transmitted. I said that's fraud. You got to stop doing that, and they keep doing it. They must know. They have to know. I think they've been paid. Oh yeah, the American College of Health, which they say is their guiding light. It's I found an article in this medical journal that said that institution took $2.5 million from the CDC in order to promote confidence and acceptance of the COVID-19 vaccine. So it's an arm of the agency, of the CDC agency. That's who they are using as their backup to not even engaging any dialogue with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, so look at, I think these people are crazy. That's what I think, you know. They're all insane. But I know I went to the dentist's office today. They wanted me to wear a mask, you know. I mean, it's ridiculous. And then here in New York, we don't have to wear them no more, you know.
Right.
But,
did they ask you? I mean, I see signs.
Well, they gave me a mask, and I just held it. I didn't put it on. So.
Yeah, I hate it when they give you one. It's like, I don't want your mask.
Yeah. No, it's like if it's like driving the trucks for the Nazis. It's like, don't drive the trucks for them, you know. If we all just, you know, do the right thing, we can get through this faster instead of helping, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't like it.
Well, here in New York, we shouldn't have that much of a problem anymore because, you know, a lot of people I can't believe are still wearing masks, and people still wearing masks in the streets and driving their cars. We've gone insane.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you see any fewer people wearing them now?
Well, I do now. I was a loner, you know, very once in a while I see someone else that wasn't wearing a mask. I was a loner. But now I see quite a few people not wearing masks, so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Okay, well, I appreciate the call. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you. All right.
Okay, with that, we're going to end our program tonight. Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday, same time, same place. Godspeed, everyone. Thanks for coming. Bye.